you know, the Panthers.
Yeah.
Getting out of there.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Today is August 3rd, Thursday, 2017. It is 9 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for an administrative workshop. We are shy Commissioner Morgan, but Commissioner DeYoung and I are here. We've got a pretty good agenda, pretty packed. Community development is first on the list. We're missing legal as they're out of town, but I think there were some legal things that came from Tuesday's meeting that we may have to forward to the weekly business session. I just don't remember. So we'll figure that afterwards for construction of the agenda, but for this morning, we've got a couple of things that Ms. Schmelch is going to be, has been working on for quite some time and is bringing forward to the board for direction and moving that process forward. So good morning and welcome, Ms. Schmelch.
Good morning. The first item I'd like to talk about is the Williams overlay. As you know, they're going to be pulling in their people and coming up with some overlay standards. We still haven't gotten to the point of creating the section where that overlay would go yet. We've had all the hearings on it. This is one that was sitting in legal.
We haven't had any formal hearings on the overlay element.
Not the new one, but the old one we did with the RP, when we did, we're doing all the marijuana ones, we did it.
I don't know that those are formal hearings. Those are, I think we've called them hearings, but they're actually not. They have no binding element as far as the land use process that I'm aware of.
Yeah, so the public hearing that the RPC had in October was a formal public hearing.
Well, the
hearing.
Rural Planning Commission did.
And then we forwarded it to the board, and then in January and in February we had those big meetings at Ann Basker.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
The Williams one is one that we were directed to move forward with, but it never got here. So I'm just saying they're coming. They're chomping at the bit, Williams is. They're working on their overlay, and we still don't have any place for it to go.
Where I understood that they were at, and correct me if I'm wrong, is they're asking their citizens whether or not they actually even want one. Because we heard from citizens yesterday at the weekly business session that seemed just similarly representative that, no, they haven't either been asked or they're not in favor of an overlay. So I haven't personally taken a position to whether or not I endorse the idea of an overlay.
Okay.
At my point right now, my answer is probably no. There's elements that the CAC can operate within that are very similar to the Citizens Advisory Committee that we put together on cannabis, and they could act in that fashion. I see it as another level of I don't want them having any kind of authority and to do land use. That's an abrogation of our responsibility and authority. It duplicates the Rural Planning Commission's responsibilities and authorities, yours. It could be another opportunity that you would need to help staff and guide. It feels cumbersome, administrative, a lot more work, and maybe not providing any greater clarity or direction.
So since they're going to poll their people and they want 66% to agree to their new standards before they will implement, how about if I tell them that we're holding off on this to see if they are even moving forward
that
with their overlay?
Reasonable.
Okay. Okay, the other one was definitions. These were ones that were heard again, same batch of marijuana rules. We're working on the definitions. I know Beecher started working on them, I think in May, and they were supposed to be ready for you, but I don't think they have finalized them, but we, again, part of keeping the ball rolling here.
Yeah, thanks for bringing them. I looked at them, and I think I need a little bit of time on this one. Where are you at, Commissioner DeYoung?
Same here, because I go to junkyard. Do we define junk?
You will if you adopt that.
Okay. Right.
My thought is what are our other counties using as definitions? Is that mm-hmm. how you compiled this
mm-hmm.
one? That's
yep.
really helpful that we're kind of consistent. Well, they don't call that, you know, a car, and it's a number of cars. In our current definition, it's three or more or something like
five.
That. Five or more. Mm-hmm. You know, you can only have a certain number that are unregistered or titled or licensed.
Licensed or inoperable.
Like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which we can, you know, we really are going to have to go section by section with this code
yeah.
to get it cleaned up. But we have to keep doing the baby steps.
Yeah.
What's really critical in those definitions for us are the camping and campground
yeah.
rules, because it's so vague right now.
So you're looking to refer these to the Rural Planning Commission?
No, they've already been there.
Okay.
Yeah, these were the ones, and they've been to you at those meetings at Ambassador.
So we're looking to do what we did yesterday.
Yep.
Kind of just initiating the two readings of a final ordinance,
yep,
adopting these definitions.
Roll up our sleeves, sit down and talk, and hammer them out and get them scheduled for the first reading.
Great. The marijuana one for me, industrial hemp, the definition of industrial hemp is very specific. It was outlined in the 2014 Farm Bill, 2011 Farm Bill. And it has a certain THC component. Biologically, it's all cannabis, but that I think that distinction has to do with the THC level. And so maybe we want to research what that specific is. So when we're talking about marijuana is technically is it nomenclature? It's not an actual term. It's all cannabis. And so I think we'd want to probably try to say cannabis, including marijuana, utilized for medical, recreational, but not including industrial hemp. You know what I mean?
Sure. Well, this
says the plant cannabis or any part thereof, but does not include industrial hemp.
This is the definition that OLCC uses.
Okay.
So I just wanted to be consistent with OLCC.
Okay. That makes sense.
So with this one, I'd really like you to schedule a time where we can just hammer it out and get it moving.
Yeah.
I still have a question with junk, because what you're describing here is not junk. It's like a recycle yard, like. The recycle place out there it's in the city, but out there on the industrial way, their recycling yard. Junk to me is like, could be anything. Like some of our compounds have got junk.
Yeah.
You know, that's junk to me. It's just stuff that should belong in a landfill somewhere.
Yes, so there's junk yards, there's salvage yards, there's, I forget the name for the recycling facility. Those are all defined.
Yeah.
The problem we're running into is people literally have a lot of junk, as we know, and we get a lot of complaints on them. And we can try and get it dealt with through environmental health, through their nuisance ordinance, but they keep coming back to us. So we're like, well, you know, if we had a definition of junk, we could treat it as junk because it is junk, and then we could do something about it through this code.
Environmental health is treating it from a trash?
And just trash, just garbage.
Trash, solid waste.
And they need, I think, 4 complaints or something, or 3 complaints is what they require.
Really?
That's what we're told, yeah. But this way, by putting a definition of junk, which we should have anyway, in the code, it allows Denise to go after those really bad properties.
Okay. I think the road numbering ordinance is really pretty key. It's pretty tight. I know that we have had discussions, and you're going to have to forgive me, because I may be backtracking. I just want to call out the element of, I know I underlined them. There they are.
ABC 1, 2, 3?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. What do you want to do? What are our neighboring counties doing?
I can't remember, but we made it consistent with Connie. I sat down with Connie, the assessor, and said, Connie, how are you doing them? So we didn't have to change everything
she's
in her
really
system.
Important, but she's not the only consideration.
So let me just give a little background on this.
Great.
So counties are tasked with doing a rural road numbering ordinance or road numbering assignments. So this code says how you name a road, but we're supposed to have a code that says how you number those houses or properties along there. And this year, you know, last year, OLCC said that you couldn't exceed a 40,000 square foot canopy unless your county had rules that allowed you to do so, which we did not. So then they changed it and they said, okay, you can have a marijuana grow per address. And once we got flooded with multiple addresses for a property. And staff is like, what do we do? And I'm like, well, what does our ordinance say? Come to find out, we don't have one, we never have. We can't find one. Legal even looked for it. We need this on the books anyway, and it helps clarify, like what Commissioner Hare was just referring to was, if you're in a campground or a mall situation, does each one get a number, or are they suite ABC? Are they unit? Blah blah blah.
Base.
Yeah, and so I talked with Connie after Commissioner and I met. And she explained how in the assessing world, what a unit means, what a lot means, what a space means, and are they urban or rural. And so we made this consistent with that. But again, this is one, let's roll up our sleeves, let's go through it word by word and hammer it out.
The only concern for me is that you've got numbers, and how do you delineate, you have to put in section, unit, or whatever, because currently on state highways, they use A, B, C, D.
Mm-hmm.
My family's ranch has been divided into a couple of different parcels, and it's A, B, C. It's the first one, and then the number plus A plus B plus C, and it's, you don't need, there's no confusion about if you put a number after that, is it 5121? Well, that's not in the same spot as 5120.
Yeah,
the next, that could be confusing to me if you don't put in that unit delineation of section, lot, suite. And you don't have to do that with A. That was where I was taking
I
back.
I could see the confusion if you were calling for help and you said I live at 1521 or 1522, and the guy's going, I don't see a 1522 when they're all 1520.
Well, and, one of the concerns that we had was what happens when you hit Z? And I know...
Double A.
Yeah, and, because we were discussing, how many times would that happen? And in reality, it can happen. We are in a situation where we do have properties with more than 26 of whatever on them.
So there's a trailer, almost, I guess it's a fairly, no, that's not a permanent. So there's one out on Rover, that's not a rural road, that's not our thoroughfare. Okay, I'm sure that there's someone somewhere, but maybe it's a trailer park, like a mobile home, and they have more than 26 spots. But it's all one address, and so they get the 2231A.
I guess in the worst case scenario, it would be AABB. Rarely if we come into AA.
Then you say A1A2A.
We just need to decide on what it is. I kind of like the fact that there's a separation between numbers and spaces.
Okay, so should we just make it say the letters?
I would go
alphabetical instead of numerical.
What I think I need to do is sit down with Connie and maybe you and say, what is it that you're looking to try to achieve, Connie? Because we're not changing the past. We're only changing the future. And I think how have you been treating address requests for multiple space properties? Have you been saying, no, we don't do that. You have one address. Unless you're dividing your property, providing for multiple residences, there's no need for an additional address. And then you can't get multiple addresses per property to get multiple OLCC permits per property to be able to have a larger canopy prop. Is that still a problem, or people aren't having that?
Yeah.
Still a problem.
Yeah, we just had one this morning that came in and was denying some of the action we did on that.
That's not consistent, I think, with the intent of OLCC to have a canopy space per address, not to assign. I mean, that's just skirting the whole point.
I agree, and that's why we brought this up in spring, and we really want to get this one on the books, and I really do not feel comfortable with staff administering a policy that's not even a policy or an ordinance. I mean, it's literally a paragraph typed out on an old typewriter.
Well, the board can issue an order, and that will serve as an end term. That's a guiding policy for you, and that's not a problem. We can do that this week. I mean, we can do that fast.
So this one doesn't have to go, this is not an amendment to this code. So this one does not have to go through the Plan Commission. This one can just go through a first and second reading and be adopted. So this one could go pretty quick.
It isn't part of the code? It wouldn't be?
No.
It's part of our overall code, if it's an
county
ordinance.
Code, yeah.
Yeah.
But DLCD would only require it if it's going in here.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah, and it's written as Chapter 15 of the county code.
I think that it's pretty close. It's just that one element for me. Everything else seemed really good. Did you have any questions on it?
The definitions one, I didn't read the rural road ones yet. I read the definitions.
The rural road ones is the one we're on right now. The only other issue I had was multiple addresses. Said address and space or unit number shall be assigned in chronological order. Wouldn't it be, and it goes on to say, in an orderly pattern on the property that meets the numbering system guidelines, wouldn't it be geographical order? I think we're looking to try to make it consistent. So a fire,
we want it clear for fire, yeah.
If they, like Paradise Ranch, they've got one lot that's been developed, and you wouldn't number that one inconsistent with the geography if they came online at different times. That could be a poor example, but but by example, that's chronological. That one came first. It shouldn't be A unless it's like right next to the roadhouse.
So, yes.
Okay.
So where this one came from, we have a large marijuana farm, multiple buildings, and they wanted this one to be like 12, this one to be like 9, and this one to be like 14. And we're like, no, they have to go in order.
Well, and not to mention, I mean, east and west, north and south, they've even the odds on numbering.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to break those rules. We need it to be clear for rural metro, Illinois Valley Fire, Williams
says,
Fire, whoever's going.
That's the intent. I just looking at chronological seems like we built this building and then you build that building. It's like, what are you planning on doing?
That makes perfect sense. I understand what you're saying.
It needs to be like spatial or geographical substitute that works. You know where I'm talking about?
I know, yeah.
Well, and how many spaces can the lot be divided by at the most? And so you know what your limits are. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, okay, here's where they would be kind of thing based on, I don't know, maybe they only develop one, but...
Well, if you're okay with me just hammering out those minor differences with Simon and bringing it to a first reading...
Okay. I think it's pretty... pretty straightforward, but there are just a couple of nuances there.
Well, let me sit down with Connie.
Just to clarify.
And
I think Connie needs to be in the room too.
And then we'll have something. I think we can move it forward.
Okay.
Really, and it's different than all the other text amendments to the RLDC that you're talking about. So, if I can get clarity from her and stuff, I think we can move that one forward.
It just needs to be defensible and make sense and be safe.
I think we're real close on it. I mean, it's real good.
Okay, so we'll meet with Connie and then move it forward for a first reading.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll talk to Williams about theirs, and the other one we're going to roll up our sleeves and work on. So that leaves us one more. And this one is the unsafe structures ordinance. Jackson County has an unsafe structures ordinance. Grants Pass has an unsafe structures ordinance. They're very, very strict. Like if you had a bad gutter, they can deem it unsafe sometimes. We do not want anything strict like that at all. We just want this simple, basically two-paragraph code, which allows us to address some of the structures we've run into lately. For example, there was one where there was a bunch of cats, some dead cats and cats in there, and we had no code on the books to prevent that person from going back into that unsanitary condition.
Apparently there were multiple inches of feces. We've had other houses like that. Not okay.
This would allow us to address those. So really, if you look at the code, there's only two paragraphs that really mean anything, and it's the paragraph that says... So most of it's, you know, purpose, jurisdiction, authority, but if you go down to unsafe conditions, that's where you really... see the meat of it. And it's basically saying if it becomes unsafe and sanitary or deficient because of like the egress facility, like all the doors are boarded up or there's no way to get out, or light and ventilation, or that constitute a fire hazard or dangerous to human life or public welfare, or involve illegal or improper occupancy, it's considered an unsafe condition. And this language comes out of the National Safety Code. So the National Safety Code has some codes, and then they have some that are optional for Oregon to adopt. And Oregon as a state hasn't adopted them, but many counties have. And we took the trimmest, least impact, but the simplest, smallest code we could find to accomplish that, rather than have this lengthy code, which really gives you more authority than you need.
Like, for instance, and say you had a house that you used for methamphetamine production. Mm-hmm. That permeates into the walls, the carpet, and everything. And so would this prevent somebody from coming in and buying that, saying, you know what, I can fix that up. I'll paint the walls and I'll re-carpet and be done with it. Because, you know, for instance, and then it's, you're right back, you've got young children playing on a carpet and the stuff's in the walls and chewing on molding, door jams and whatnot like little kids do. Guess what? You know, it should have been torn down. How do we just say this house, do we post it? and board it up and say, this thing, the next place
about,
this thing does, it does this give us that authority?
This would.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, we partner with the sheriff on a couple inspections because there's only so much the sheriff can do, too. And then they rely on us to help, and there's only so much we can do. This gives us the authority to take those meth houses and say they're unfit for human occupancy, they have to be closed up.
There's already state law that allows that, though, for those houses. So meth houses already can be deemed, they can
be... Well, that's meth house. I'm talking, okay, let's go back to the cat house.
Go to something else, because meth houses is already covered by law.
The cat house. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Where the cat...
Yeah.
Clarification.
Melting cat.
Where are the cats? Feline house. Let's go that one. And on that one there, we didn't have any authority to just say, okay, that'll never, this house is never going to be occupied again.
Yet, you know, commissioners were asking us, and we don't have it.
Okay.
And the health department doesn't have it. This gives us that authority.
Right.
That's what actually prompted this to come forward to you.
So my question would be, let's look at cat house, for instance, and we say this house is not deemed inhabitable. And what enforcement realms are we looking at as far as the owner says, it's my house, I'm going back in?
Okay.
And the other side is also what cost and liability, not liability, what cost to the county if we say you can't go in there and they're like, fine, it's yours. Now we're on the hook for the bill to dispose of or remedy or everything else like that.
Okay, so this one does not go in this code, okay? So this isn't part of the Rural Land Development Code, which means it doesn't fall under Denise in particular. This code, Mark has authority from the state to do it, and the state can issue citations on them if we have a code. So if we have the code, then Mark has the authority to go in there and say that's it. What Mark typically will do, and there's a thing in here that says he has to give notice to them and see what happens. He can actually go out there and have the power shut off if it's deemed unsafe. And then
it's unsafe and unsanitary.
Interchangeable. Yeah,
so what I don't see in the definition of this, I mean, maybe dangerous to human life or pub, I mean...
I think we need additional players in the room on this one, and so I've asked to schedule it for the general discussion on Tuesday morning.
Okay.
That in the definitions one, because we're going to move the rural road numbering ordinance to the weekly business session next week.
Okay.
And so I think that'll provide us the opportunity to have all of the players in the room to kind of answer some of these questions where we're not, you know, let's have the state law on this, let's have the building law, because I'm not so sure that the health and structural element. Because if the building is structurally sound, that's the structural end of things, but there could be a health component to it that makes it, you know, unsafe, that is probably outside of Mark's jurisdiction and should be.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. But that doesn't mean that this wouldn't help us cumulatively make the decision to know that these three things have to be done before somebody can move back in there. And there are solid waste resources that we can use. There are, you know, other resources in the community. We put together the team that says, this is how we're going to help you get back into your home.
Yeah. And I do think if we have questions, it should be done at a workshop where we...
Yeah. So if Tuesday morning works for you, the board is here. At least it's on our calendars to be here. And Wally's back in town. I think we'd have the players in the room to be able to address that one. So rather than speculating on it, we should just...
If we have... If they okay...
I have to do my first aid certification.
The feline house. And if we had a contract, says, oh, I can clean all that up. I'm certified to do all that. I've seen the feline house, and I think it needs to just be destroyed, in my estimation, but that's just my opinion.
Well, there'll be a team of experts. Someone
we
might say
we could
do it. The other person says, no, you can't.
Exactly.
You can't abate that ammonia element.
Or something that everybody signs off on.
There's not enough kills in the world to paint that.
A notice to proceed or something that all of these things have been met.
And that would be Mark.
Between Mark and environmental health, I think those are the players that need to be at the table for that, to have that discussion. So that would be, and solid waste, as Commissioner Harris said. So,
so before you got... here, Commissioner Morgan, we went over the definitions, which we'll revisit on Tuesday. I'm sorry that you can't be here, but I think we're going to move forward with that discussion. If you have any thoughts on that, you've got a couple of...
I will make sure to get... I'm going to be here all day Friday, and I can review everything and give comments.
Williams overlay, we're going to hold off on that until they have their special community election and stuff. But I expressed my hesitation, reservation after yesterday's weekly business session testimony. I just don't want to add any more administrative overburden to her, and I'm not sure what that serves as far as an overlay that benefits. I certainly want their input on these things, no different than our cannabis advisory committee. So that's my personal perspective, but we can hold off on that decision. And then moving the road numbering ordinance to the WBS after I chat with those two, get it all squared away.
Okay.
Anything else?
No. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Johnson, it's your favorite project here.
Yes.
Coming to at least another phase going.
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, this is a contract between the county and Vitus Construction to renovate the courtrooms for computer monitors and other electronic equipment. OJD is footing the bill, and we're just coordinating and project managing.
So the current IGA called for $100,000 for the project. We had one response when we put out for an RFP. I think that's what we put out. And the response was around $111,000, so it was over what our initial appropriation from the state was. Two courts, then to us. I had a conversation with Kirk and his staff yesterday and today, and he's applied for the administrative element, and he's gotten verbal approval for that, verbal approval for the $111,000. And verbal approval for a contingency of $15,000, which I had asked for, because we're dealing with personal spaces of each of these judges, and that's going to be real important that we get it right. I mean, the designs are real good. It's pretty solid based on all the consultations, but you can imagine with dealing with anybody's personal space, it may or may not go exactly how it's planned. The way the contract is written, we do the work until the money runs out. So given that verbal agreement with Kirk was like, nope, we're going to keep you at $100,000. That's as much as you get, and the check's in the bank, and we get that. Then that's where the project stops, and Kirk is aware of that. So it's really incumbent upon him to make sure that his communication with Oregon Judicial Department is consistent, thorough, and gets the job done. So I'm in favor of signing the contract that's reviewed by legal today, with no real obligation to the county, even though it exceeds the current IGA. We have another IGA that will be coming before the board, he says, in less than 2 weeks for us to sign this contract extension. The IGA right now goes till October 31st. The new one will go to December 31st and account for all of the elements that we've asked for, the administrative, which isn't in there right now, and the current rate of $100,000 needs to go to $111,000 with $15,000 contingency. The $111,000 will be appropriated to the county, and we'll draw down and pay off those things as they come in. The $15,000 overlay will be kept by courts and will be used as an ongoing, as needed basis. So I feel comfortable signing it today, knowing full well that if we get to a point where we don't have the new IGA, or
we just stop at $100,000.
We just stop at $100,000.
Okay. Yeah, so, the sooner we can get on the schedule. People are pretty slammed right now. So
We want to get this contract in and out as soon as possible.
Yeah, we're going right now, so at least we're in sync there for something.
Yeah.
We're not signing anything that we haven't already kind of talked about as far as at the weekly business sessions when the IGA was signed, and we'll have to sign the new IGA over there to accommodate those things. $6,500 is the administrative overhead.
That sounds right.
5%, I believe, of the initial contract. So,
all right. Good deal.
It's better than nothing. We're not doing it for free, but it is part of our facility, and will stay with us. So, yeah.
And the bid that we are going with, we've had experience with the contractor, and they did work for the courts, and everybody's always been real pleased with it. So, looking forward to another.
Really appreciate you doing this. It's kind of outside of your core competence. Not your core competency. It's totally within your core competency. It's outside your job description.
Thank you.
But I really appreciate you. He's been doing this for a long time. And thank you so much.
Yeah,
so
no
without, I'll entertain a motion to approve the contract with OJD, contract number 160056, if that is the pleasure of the board.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion on this? So, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Great. Motion carries 3-0. So we'll get this signed and over to you. It says Public Works Project. I think that's not exactly. I mean, the Building Operations Department is right there. So we'll go through this and make sure it's all exactly what it needs to be. And
yeah.
Get that signed as soon as possible. Once we have it signed and up to Kirk, he's prepared to move forward with the new IGA language and stuff.
Okay, and we've already had the contractor sign it as well.
Great, so it should be ready to go.
Just an FYI, we're working on the benches in the courtyard today. So.
Good.
There's something else we were going to...
Juvenile detention. The juvenile detention, we're trying to ramp up, get it reopened. We're going to have multiple different projects going, painting, some flooring, some door control things, those type of things. We had
money in the budget to do these kinds of things as a result of a levy passing. We're concerned about is that the current thresholds for appropriation of dollars might encumber the renovation in a timely manner.
Yeah.
And so delegating authority by the board. I think we had discussed yesterday, and I think, where's Arthur?
Yeah.
We're gonna dock his pay. I'm just kidding. I can't remember what we agreed upon, but I think the authority of the director of facilities is 10,000. The liaison is up to 50. I don't feel comfortable, you know, if something came in over that, just go ahead and doing it. And so I'd bring that to the board anyways, what I think I told Arthur, just keeping you on the loop that there are going to be some costs incurred for stuff that sat fallow for a while.
Yeah.
Are you having to update the crammers as well?
Yeah, we're getting bids on that as well.
That's the system that's going to be in excess, probably.
Well, and that one, to me, almost should be its own separate issue.
Yeah.
And then the doors and the maintenance and all the other is the part of, you know.
Yeah, we're going to try to integrate the cameras along with the touch screens and intercom, so they have one seamless piece of equipment. But we'll have that locked in as one separate bid.
Okay.
As an upgrade.
As an upgrade. Yeah.
Like for instance, we spent We bought a new walk-in cooler for there because before when they opened it up in 96, they just had a bunch of freezers and separate things, and it just didn't seem very efficient. So. That was the general perspective of, no, that's really not how you run a commercial kitchen. That's
running down to Sears and buying a new cooler once a year is not very efficient. So,
so they use it just reach in stuff.
Yeah, something you'd have in your home. So, yeah. So.
Well, they have to probably reach into all of them to find, you know, if anybody else.
Were your ears burning?
We'd already talked about it. You're just supposed to help me remember, but I finally did eventually, and so I think we're good with the policies we have. I'm not looking for any kind of a...
We knew this was coming.
Yeah.
We talked about it pre-levy, that this is some of the stuff we'd have to be looking at to ramp up the building again.
It's
so
going to cost money to recommission that.
Well, yeah. And I think we want to take advantage of the fact that it's not occupied right now, so painting, you know, cells and stuff where you'd have people behind the door, you just do it ahead of time to where that's not a consideration of security and safety and stuff for anybody working.
Yeah, and just as an example, the painting that is used in there is all epoxy-based, so when you have juveniles in there, the smell, those type of things, so it doesn't get painted very frequently, so it's an opportune time to get in there.
Take time for it to kick. But one of the things I just want to make sure that we do, because, you know, going into the levy, more than one occasion, you're never going to do with the money. You're going to take it and do something else. So I want to make sure there's over-the-top documentation as to where every dime is being spent. If that money is being spent to bring that back online, fine. And that's justifiable.
Yeah.
But if we're doing it to buy uniforms or something like that, you know, I think you know what I mean.
Right.
I just want to make sure that we document, because if anybody ever comes back and says, well, if you spent that money over here instead of here, we'll be able to back that up.
And finances set up a separate fund, so we'll charge against that. So at any time, we can go back and look exactly.
That's not just instructions to juvenile. That's instructions to the sheriff also. Because you, both of those things are going to be under the microscope from now on out.
Yeah.
For the next 5 years. So let's make sure we have the documentation. When we're asked, just say, yep, got it right here.
Yeah, I'm all for that. Yeah. Yeah, we're definitely under the gun ramping up over there and juvenile at the same time. So a lot of these projects, the more we can expedite.
We're working on making sure that Ryan's staffing level is appropriate. He's had in his budget for a while some increased staffing. There's no depth over there. In fact, I don't want to say that I could do Mr. Graves' job tomorrow. Certainly couldn't. But there are certain things administratively that I could probably fill in on a daily basis. I certainly couldn't do everything he does. There are very few things that he does on a regular basis, and it's not turning wrenches. It's the project management stuff that if you don't know the day-to-day stuff, I really don't feel comfortable having zero depth as far as leadership in his program, and so we're working on that kind of a deal, contingency backup stuff. So,
well, good, because I just talked to my head of my master's program yesterday. My last class I'm going to take is project management. So, hey, I'm excited in the fall I'll be able to follow you around and say, tell me. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. All right.
I do need to touch base with you about one issue. Can do that one-on-one later.
Anytime.
And just kind of give you a heads up on something. Sure. And also curious the status of us moving ahead with the upgraded access for the courthouse and different buildings.
Key card
access. We have the bids. We're ready to go on it because of the weather and some of the other projects. Holding off on getting started on it.
You want it to be hotter?
No, yeah. Because a lot of it's indoor work. Or
you can do that anytime.
Yeah, we're looking at fall.
Okay.
So, but it's we're ready to go on it.
Okay.
So probably be the 1st of October is what we're looking at.
All right. Yeah. I just need to remember to call you and give you a heads up on the other one.
Okay. Do you want me to call you?
You can.
I'd be happy to.
Okay.
Great. Have a good day.
About a quarter to two if you're available.
Okay. Airports, Mr. Graves.
Good morning. How's everybody today?
What, they want to move their lines and get an easement? I don't see what the...
Yeah, this seems pretty routine to me. We established an easement for them.
Mr. Graves, I'm sorry.
Yes.
We have an elected in the office of fire. You're just here? Okay.
Public Works Park.
Good. Then you're going to... You like to defer to electeds.
No worries.
Even Mr. Allen.
Someday maybe I'll be elected. But
no.
I've managed to avoid that so far. So.
I'm sure you have higher aspirations, Mr. Graves. Yeah. Everybody should.
Anyway, we had the need to relocate these transmission lines for a development project we have going on at the airport. And it is customary to allow the management or the owner-operators of those lines to have access to that area so that they can perform maintenance, et cetera, in the future. So that's what this is. We originally were requested to provide a 40-foot wide easement, and so we felt that that might cause a little bit of an encroachment in our ability to build hangars out in that area, so we negotiated a little bit with the folks up in Portland.
How close is this to the property line? Because our code has a 10 to 30 foot setback from property lines.
For easements, you mean? Or
It's for structural construction from the property line.
Right.
And probably you might even know better than I do, but there's so it. We wouldn't do anything less than.
No. And all of our future, anyway. All of our future plans for buildings out of that area respect all of our current setbacks, et cetera.
Okay.
However, one corner of one building that we have plans for is going to underlie the area of this easement on the inside surface.
Okay.
We simply needed to request a waiver from PP&L. They examined the height of the building, the height of the distribution lines that are going to be hanging there below the transmission lines, and issued the waiver. It's just not an issue.
Great. Well, sounds good to me.
Yeah, it's
pretty routine.
It's pretty standard, pretty routine.
Are they vacating the other easement?
I haven't been able to get a square answer yet on that, but I think that that's been a lower priority. We just wanted to get focused on this and get it done. I did ask the question in writing. and I'm expecting
the vacation because
right.
You know, just because they move the poles, if they've got an easement,
correct,
the building.
I don't want that to be an issue going forward.
I was going to say this has to actually go forward if they don't do the other one.
I'm
sorry. If you want this easement, give us the vacation on the other one.
Well, I didn't
stipulate
place
that,
a stipulation like that, but I certainly would be happy to get strong about it. You know,
happy to do this one. We just like our books kind of clean.
Sure. Oh yeah.
We
yeah.
like them clean, but they're not. You know.
Well, we yeah. I mean,
we are constantly.
As a side comment, and that having cleaned up those old power easements is huge.
Yeah.
Because there's so many of them out there that we have no clue where they are.
The problem is that they don't happen in a one fell swoop. Like they should.
Yes, I agree with that.
It's language. We'll get to it.
And well, and while we were negotiating this easement, I threw that into the mix. I said, well, we really need this old one to be extinguished or, you know, removed. And they said, oh, yeah, yeah, not a problem, but we're not going to muddy up the language of this easement with the, you know, removal of the other one. I said, well, okay, fine. You know, you guys probably have a reasonable and customary way of proceeding on these things, but I need to have that old easement extinguished.
Should we give them a time on that? Just say it has to be done within 3 months or 90 days or 120 days of signing of this?
You know, they're going to be able to service this one, obviously. They don't need an easement to put it in. Did they put it in?
To put what in?
They're in the process right now.
Yeah, they're in the process. They're not up yet, but I mean, so I've given them access to the airport property because all the work's happening inside the boundaries of the airport. So
it's not encumbering their ability to do the removal. They get this easement when they propose the easement of the other one. I mean, it's not changing anything. They're doing what they need to do.
Okay.
So the board is prepared to move forward at a moment's notice on any weekly business session that there is a subsequent...
a second one to vacate the other.
Vacation of an easement.
Okay.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No.
I wouldn't want to hold up, you know, they have...
Not in
have
a hostile way, but just trying to make sure that we don't let it fall into the cracks.
Keep our books clean.
Understood.
Make theirs.
Yeah.
So you don't need to come back for that.
At the request of our elected surveyor.
That's fine.
The second that it's ready to
I'll
go,
take all the help I can
we're
get.
Good to go.
Okay. As soon
this
as,
is a consent calendar item. It doesn't change fiscal or policy for your
notification.
Thanks, Mr.
I'm good.
Grace.
Thank you very much.
You left me a voicemail, as I imagine you left everybody a voicemail, having to do with the expedited nature. I think we want to move as fast as possible on any one of those core grants or any grant you ever mm-hmm. have. You find it within your liaison to bring it before the board, even if it isn't at an admin, to get it going.
Appreciate that. Yeah,
that's my opinion.
Yeah, we have, as I mentioned, we have quite a number of contractor contracts with Copeland, with Gatt Electric, with Cunard, and contracts with WH Pacific, with Precision Approach Engineering. All are contingent upon receiving the offer and grant aid from the federal government. So we're all sitting around spring-loaded, ready to go and ready to start shoveling dirt, but we haven't received the grants themselves. Now, I just got an email from Amy Amrine, who is a staffer in Senator Merkley's office, and they've received advance notice of the federal grant. They like to send that notice out to the politicians in advance of the public announcement. So I've worked with Senator Merkley's office in the past, and so I have established a few connections there, and I just found out that we're going to get this grant at the Illinois Valley Airport.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was really nice. It was really nice. And I expect, per the email that I sent to you last night, that we'll be receiving another one any moment now for the parallel taxiway at the Grants Pass Airport. And so there are a number of contracts that are ready to go. And we'll be, you know, I don't want to inundate Wendy, but you know, we're going to be sending in agenda item requests, and in the hopes that we receive the documents in the next day or two, and
that's
then
fine.
They'll be all ready to go.
That's fine.
Okay. I had one quick item, if I could bring it up.
Absolutely.
Brainstorming with people all the time about ways to raise money for the airports, the idea of a regional auction was suggested to us, and there's a professional auctioneer company that is willing to do that. It's a money-making opportunity for them, but it would also be a fundraising opportunity for the Illinois Valley Airport to have a community auction out there on the spare time supply parking lot that's on the west side of 199 run that on a Saturday and have, you know, the whole Illinois Valley community and from people from far and wide bringing stuff in to be auctioned, okay? Like, you know, cars and boats and planes and airplane parts and furniture and tools and, you know, whatever people want to get rid of or we'll be on the lookout for. We've selected a target date of October 21st. I've had an email exchange last night with Rogue Oregon Auctioneers, Timmery Davis, who's the principal there, about my concerns that this would turn into an auction of bales of marijuana or something of that nature. And she assured me that, they have that completely locked down under control and they don't get involved in anything that has any kind of federal restrictions on it. So they have the ability to do real estate transactions, automobile title transfers. She's an FFL. She can, you know, do background checks and three-day holds on, you know, handgun sales. I mean, just all kinds of stuff. They have a massive capability to deal with all this very efficiently. And it's an opportunity for the airport out there to earn a little money for our operating budget. So
maybe they'll even have some, you know, like greenhouse equipment and stuff that'll be for sale by then.
Sure. Yep. You know, Good Earth Organic Supply is right there, right across the street from Spare Time Supply. It's like the guy selling pickaxes and wheelbarrows to the gold miners, you know, 150 years ago.
You said the revenue might be used for operations, but wouldn't it be used in your greatest need, capital match grant money?
Well, yeah, and it can be used for anything that we need it for. So, yeah, to fill in the chinks that aren't being filled in by core grants and, and bake sales and other things. So,
I think it's good use of the airport out there.
Well, yeah, and it's actually right next to the airport, up against the fence. And, and so all the guys that are out there that have propellers and aircraft engines and airframes from, you know, aircraft being restored, I mean, they can wheel all that stuff right through the gate and have it there for the auction and perhaps realize a little income from that. We're looking at Saturday, the 21st of October, as a target date, kind of trying to strike a balance between fire season and the rainy season.
He handles the auctioneer handles the auctioneer company handles all the stuff like porta potties and all that stuff. He takes care of all that.
Yes.
At the end of the day, they tally it up, give us a ledger, and then write a check.
That's correct, and we'll get a percentage of the net profit that they've realized, and all the money that comes in on the profit side is from buyer premiums. So all the buyers agree up front. If they purchase something for $1,000, then they'll pay some amount of premium. I'm not sure whatever it is. And that's how that whole thing
is. The automobile thing, they pay like 10 in and 10 out.
There you go.
The seller pays 10 and the buyer pays 10.
Most sellers and buyers don't know that, but they find out if they
unless you're a buyer and a seller, if you buy your own car.
Buyers know that at every auction. They say you're 10% premium.
Yeah.
You know, so if you buy it for $100, it's 110.
So just wanted to make sure everybody was, you know,
that
aware
sounds great.
Of that.
And, Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Good use
appreciate
of the
your time.
Property.
Yep.
Mr. Dijon Bay is up for item number D.
We're on afterwards, sir.
Yeah,
contract
exactly.
Contract for personal services with Parametrics Amendment Number 4. And then D2 is order number 2017-038 in matter of adoption of Josephine County Public Works Design, Construction, and Improvement Standards, Specifications, and Road Standards. So item number 1. Amendment number 4.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is a Parametrics contract extension, basically, for 3 years for the their work monitoring the two closed landfills, Morrison and Kirby, to meet all of our DEQ requirements.
Give us some history on this, Mr. Dijonvay. I know it, but they don't. So
the two landfills were closed long before I was here, well, at least before I came to work here. And
I know Kirby was closed in the 90s.
Yeah, and Marlson, I think, was in the 60s. I think it was only open like 5 years or something.
Yeah.
But they we're under a voluntary closure on Marlson, and we're a permitted closure on Kirby. So we try to do what we can on Marlson to not make it a permitted closure because that brings a lot more regulations on board. Parametrics are experts on groundwater and all that good, great stuff. And they come down, they monitor the groundwater, and turn all their reports into DEQ for us.
How long does this go on? Does it ever stop? I mean, do you say, okay, it's been decommissioned for 50 years and we're no longer getting anything on our, I'm assuming they have sounding wells out there.
All over the place,
for,
yes.
For testing?
Yes.
Is there some point in time when they say, no, it's deemed, it's not doing anything anymore?
The earliest they can be written off is 20 years after the closure permit started.
And we don't have a permit.
We have a permit, correct, but we do have one on Kirby.
On Kirby.
So if it closed in the 90s, we're at 20 years.
Well,
it has to be meeting a threshold, a minimum threshold.
That's what I was asking. If there's,
and I'm not so sure we're there. We've been decreasing our contract, a needed contract, the number of times per year that we've been testing and stuff, but we're not to that point. We're working on it. There's some other elements that DEQ wants as far as erosion control measures on the top. So it's about 15 acres, I think.
Yeah.
And so we're looking, Mr. Brandis has provided kind of a plan of doing about 5 acres every couple of years, utilizing the soils up there are not high enough quality to really grow anything.
Marlson's all granite.
Yeah.
But the last I've been out.
Kirby's all clay.
I haven't been out to Marlson in a long time, but unless you're back in my area, you don't even know it's there.
Right.
Nobody knows it's there. Yeah, nobody knows about the foothill one.
Yeah, I
that
know.
Was out there prior to Marlson.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. I was wondering, at what point in time can we just check that box and it's taken care of and we're no longer, no further action, I think, would be? Do we ever get that from DEQ?
We will if the groundwater ever gets to the point where there's no more.
No more evidence in there. Are we anywhere close to that? I mean, I would just say that, you know, I'm looking at a contract for a little over $500,000.
That's the total contract. That's over the whole time.
So it's one.
So the wording of this says this contract to increase by $177,000.
Yeah, $177,000 is the.
Is that the amendment
portion?
Years.
Yeah.
For
3 years.
Okay, so it's not we're paying $646,000 plus another $177,000.
Solid waste covering this?
Solid waste cover reimburses us out of the fund.
Yeah, so it is not costing us to do this. I think that's also a. Mr. DeJave, I'm going to ask you one more time. When you come before, you need to provide a comprehensive story. I don't want to make it up as we go asking these questions. It needs to be. This is what's going on. I want history. I want where the money's coming from, where it's going, for how long. All of those details need to be outlined. That's really important. If I'm not here, I don't want to have me making it up, you know. All that stuff is really, really important when we're making this decision, because you are going to, we're going to be defending that over there when we say, why are you spending? How much longer are you having to do this?
Yeah.
Where have you been? Because I know that we've been reducing the contract with Parametrics over 6 years that I've been here from a higher, much higher number. We're getting to a very, should be getting to a very stable point of a minimal cost. This doesn't feel like a minimal cost at 170 for 3 years, because I remember when we were spending like 60 a year out there, and we just renewed one for like 40, and now, you know, that's, we need all those progressions
and
a little bit of history.
We're still 60 a year here.
Right, and also I would like to, well, first off, I kind of expected Rob to be here for this presentation.
Yeah,
but
he knows these things really
Parametrics has yet to ever completely expend their budget. What they try to do is estimate what realistically DEQ may require them to do.
And it could be less.
And I'm going to be curious, because what was our starting point? What were the readings when they started this thing back in the, when did we start testing Marlson?
It predated me, so I presume probably in the 90s.
In the 90s, okay. So what did we start at, and where are we now? It's kind of like testing the groundwater out there at River Road Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Once I looked at the logs, it was very apparent that something was going on out there.
Yeah, the groundwater, and I don't want to use the word contamination, but the groundwater flume is actually migrating away, and it is reducing, but it's kind of shifting also. And
well, I'm assuming there's puddles and pockets and stuff.
We are providing bottled water for those folks that are within the higher concentration area, and we have filters on their wells as well.
Right. Well, I think, I would like to, and that's just for my own curiosity, mm-hmm. not policy, but I would like to see where we stand on that.
Yeah.
Are we making ground? There's nothing we can do about it. We're just at the waiting game. Mm-hmm. Just ride this thing out. Let mm-hmm. Mother Nature do whatever she's going to do with mm-hmm. that, with Marlson landfill out there. But okay.
And right. I'd be happy to mention to Rob, if you want, during his public works update, for him to maybe talk about this a little bit.
I think we could stand to have a little bit of history on it and get up to speed. I don't understand. We've been talking about having those solid waste. From Cave Junction has 20-year supply of their solid waste from their water treatment facility in reserve. It's been tested. Apparently it's been approved for application at the Kirby landfill. He's on the solid waste board. I don't know why this hasn't happened, and I'm really frustrated that this is a project that just seems to flounder forever, and we can't move forward with that vegetation overlay. They've got to put a certain number of organic material on the top of it to get to a point where it's going to sustain.
I'm going out to Marlson again. It's grown over. I mean... Ooh.
We actually
you are not going to get any to grow on Bear
Bend. It's not Marlson I was talking about. It's Kirby.
Yeah,
Kirby's the biggest cost to us right now. Uh-huh. Marlson probably has a higher liability because of the population around there. Kirby or Marlson actually has a cap, a rubber membrane cap over at the Solid Waste Agency about 15 years ago, I think, paid. I don't know, $1.5 million or whatever to put that on. And so our concern on the cap on that is trying to keep the motorcycles off, because they're going to eventually destroy the rubber membrane, and that's going to be a huge liability if that gets destroyed. The out there at Kirby is just a process of trying to get it vegetated. And I really think once we get it vegetated, we'll be pretty close to the full closure at that point.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to suggest we hold off on this until Rob has a chance to come in and kind of lead us through on this. So,
is there a deadline on this?
Their contract expired the end of July, so they won't be doing any work until... Obviously, the contract.
Do they do their testing quarterly, or what's their?
They do their testing quarterly or semi-annual, depending on the site.
So if we did this, if we got this thing sorted out and our questions answered by
the end of the month, would be
end
fine.
Of the month.
Yeah,
we'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, I would be. Okay. So and I apologize for not being completely up to date on this. It's just.
Order number 2017-038, Josephine County standards for specific roads. So we've talked about this at some of the previous land use hearings, and I think we've got some conflicts as far as distance access points to mm-hmm. thoroughfares and such. I think what I had recommended that I haven't had a chance to digest it as thoroughly as I'd like, and I think that there are some... our surveyor has some input. I think our community development director might have some input.
I got her comments through legal Monday, I think.
Perfect.
So most of them were just typographical and so forth. There was a few issues or differences between our definitions and hers. However, our definitions only apply to our standards and not...
Okay.
And plus, ours is a resolution, hers is an ordinance, and an ordinance would supersede the resolution if there was a conflict.
Okay. So this would
but
be...
But will staff know that when folks are coming in from the public, that this is one that is a conflict with planning, so they're not getting sent to one to the other and getting different stories? So if there is conflict, I'd rather have it addressed ahead of time so we're not in conflict.
We could actually even take those definitions out of ours, our road standards. Some of it is like the definition of a bikeway for the road department is different than the planning department, but that's because our statutes for bikeways are different than the statutes for planning for bikeways.
And it's a lot easier to change his than it is to change, when we're looking at definitions. But it might be a good opportunity. I mean, we're looking to try to clean those definitions up. I don't want to do a bunch of stuff and then really not address inconsistencies like Commissioner Morgan was saying.
Yeah.
The only thing I had a couple on pathways. And I would like to see us adopt a pathway, and I'm going to go to Mountain View Place up there. We had a discussion about that. You know, this private neighborhood. It's a dead-end street that's 375 feet long. It's kind of maintained, kind of not. And those folks want to put in a 15, their whole neighborhood wants a 15-mile-an-hour speed zone. And yet we don't have any pathway for them to go about that in our present code. It's 25 or nothing. And I don't know if there's, you know, I'm just asking. This is something you kind of take back. Is that I would be interested in a pathway that says, you know, for instance, if the whole neighborhood signs a petition at 15 miles an hour because they feel it's safer for them, if they sign it for 35 miles an hour, we want a 35 instead of 25 through this residential. I can see that as saying absolutely not. But if they want to be more cautious rather than less, and they're the ones that's going to be affected by 15 miles an hour from 25 miles an hour, I don't see that. I would like us to see a pathway, if it's possible, for them to get there.
Yeah,
and we don't have that.
This standard doesn't apply to speed zones. It's a design speed. It's what you design the road in theory for cars to be able to drive. The speed zone is actually set by state law in the state of Oregon, not by this.
Well, I'm going out to like Mountain View Place. I don't know whether 25 miles per hour is adequate out there because of the. I mean, it's pretty lumpy, but that's, you know, that's where I was wondering. And then also on the access spacing, which is a new section, I see that we've done that. How is this absolutely, you know, is there any way that they can challenge this or have special recognition? Is there a variance process that they can go through?
There's a design modification. It's in there. It's section 1. I always get it wrong. 104 or 107, just because where I used to work, it was numbered the other one. But there is a design modification process. Process is not changed.
Where they can apply?
Yes.
104, is that?
It's either 104 or 107.
I'll just put it under design modification.
Yeah, design modification. Okay. I'm sorry, I don't have that.
No problem. I'll look it up later.
It's 104.
I just need to go.
Yeah.
And I'll look at it and see if that applies, and if that's adequate.
Yeah, and again, we can't override state law. So it's if state law says it has to be something, there's nothing that I don't feel there's anything probably the county could adopt to override state law. I'm speaking now kind of for you guys.
Right. You know, just and how long has state law been in? I mean, is this recent? Because I mean, I'm seeing violations. If I go by this right here, we don't have a county. We don't have access anywhere.
Well, the access spacing is different because it varies over the years. I mean, you know, a lot of these roads were built in, you know, 1880, and if you have a horse and buggy, I mean, you know, you don't care if the driveway's you know, whatever. But the basic standards that are in here, I looked at all the counties around the area, and we're right in the average of what the counties are in the area. It is less than what the state of Oregon has for their highway system. So, you know, I think it's conservative, but it's a realistic number. But then again, it's significantly less than what the 660 is.
Yes, I'm looking. I'm just going to use 55 mile an hour. You can't have a driveway within 800 feet of an intersection. Mm-hmm. You may have three lots before you get to 800 feet. So we're going to go to 800 feet and then come back and feed the other three lots. You know that's
any, any new lots. But this doesn't apply to existing driveways. We wouldn't go through and say, you know, you have 19 driveways and they're in violation. We're going to remove them.
Right.
Oh, we had a recent situation with a house fire in Selma that was on an existing property, existing driveway, and when they went to rebuild the house on the same plot, they were required to put a new driveway in versus the one they already had. So it's kind of one of those things that, I don't know. It's
new location or just rebuild it to...
they made them change the location and everything of the driveway that had been there forever. So it's okay, that happens. You've got to bring up to code when you... have contracting
issues.
Yeah,
but I think there's somebody has to be weighing, you know, it's kind of like a business decision, opportunity cost. How much safer are you getting by putting it X number of feet or in a different location or on a different street. I mean, I can see some O'Brien situations where they're at the corner of an intersection and you're right on 199 and you could have access on a different road. Yeah, you're going to dump onto the feeder road before you jump right onto 199 and reduce that congestion. I can see that for sure. I appreciate Mr. Allen being here. And is there anything that you wanted to give at this point?
Well, as far as access stuff, I mean, I know that's been a hot topic lately. And I am not an engineer, and I don't profess to be an engineer.
Neither do we, but we're going to speculate.
But, I mean, as far as asking questions and things, I mean, what you brought up there, Dan, you know, is, you know, 800 feet away from an intersection. I mean, I guess the reality is that may exempt some properties from being developed. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is that situation there. But then, you know, as far as, you know, a request to modification, you know, the standards there, I know that in conversations that I've had with Public Works, they say, well, you bring us another standard that we can apply here. But does that also then allow room for an engineer that I hire to make a recommendation on his own? And would you accept that? Because I've been told that, you know, you bring us another standard from another jurisdiction, and then we'll apply that. So, not by you, but by one of the other engineers there. So, how much, I guess that's what I'm looking at, is, you know, how much input is a local engineer or, you know, mm-hmm. a civil engineer, professional engineer, you know, allowed to make in these situations as far as a recommendation to a modification there, and then your willingness to accept that.
Process needs to be spelled out pretty clearly. Like, right. If an engineer provides you, you know, safe modification based on other standards or something like that, these are the things that we'll look at for an exception. One of the challenges that I've heard is, you know, there's no direction given by Public Works as far as what they would consider as an alternative solution. I think we've been overly cautious in the engineering department, like they're providing legal advice by providing an engineering option or the criteria that they would look to. And that's inconsistent with everything you'd see either at legal or at planning to say, these are the things within the code that make sense and are doable. Provide us an engineered design work that meets these criteria and we can get there. That's my challenge, that what I've heard either in hearings or speculatively.
I have offered many times for the engineers, if they have a design modification request, to come in and talk to me.
Yeah.
And we'll discuss it one-on-one. I mean, there's lots of things tossed around the table.
But I think that's
half the time they don't.
Same
come
story
in.
Is right. That you won't tell them. And maybe, I don't know where that comes from, but it could be like you don't want to give legal advice. You know, this isn't legal advice. Is what Wally would say, or I would say, or yesterday with Cheryl Walker said, I'm not giving legal advice, but this is what I would do. You know, it's a recommendation.
We have a lot of really unique circumstances in Josephine County that, for instance, if we fall back to a national code, there is no way that can blanket the whole United States. If we wish to fall back on that, I think we certainly could, and same thing with state code. The state is so varied in you're talking corners in the mountains of, you know, over in the Grand Ronde River or whatever. That's different than Josephine County, and that's why I think Josephine County needs to have, a pathway to say, okay, we're unique here, and in my estimation, instead of saying, you know, some engineer in Washington D.C. says. Just in my estimation, I think we're okay on this. The paragraph top of things is all developments shall have legal access to county or public roads. Access onto any county road shall be permitted only upon issuance of an access permit on demonstration of compliance with the provisions of the county road standards. And I don't know what ASHTO standards are.
American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials.
Thank you. Those guys.
Yeah.
So, I just don't know if there's a pathway or an application that they can get.
The numbers that are in there are less than what the AASHTO federal and national standards are. And again, I took the local counties in the area and found out what their spacing standards were and actually averaged those, and we are really close to the average of those counties.
How do they do? Did you ask them? You know, what happens when you have, like we had the other day, with two flag lots that come together with a fence line between them, and they're different tax lots, so we need to have two driveways together. We're talking at 55 miles an hour, it's 400 feet between driveway to driveway.
I will say that if it's an existing legal tax lot and that's their only access point, they will get a driveway, because we will not deny a driveway or we end up paying them for their lot.
Yeah, that's good.
Because that's a taking.
Back to all so, the bill that shall have legal access.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not that we will, if somebody is within, you know, if their lot is 300 feet from an intersection and it's a 55 mile an hour road, we will not say you cannot have a driveway. It might be you need to get it as far away from that intersection as you can, okay. But we will not say you will not have a driveway.
Mr. DeGenevieve, I've seen when I go on the Google and the surveyor thing that the assessors provide, there's these developments that have, maybe there's six lots or whatever, and they all have this little finger thing that comes out.
Yeah.
Is that what they're trying to accomplish? I mean, that just, from a surveyor standpoint, is money in the bank. It just feels like a great opportunity to get out there and, you know.
That wouldn't be, in older times.
But everybody
times,
gets 25 feet of
that,
road frontage.
That was one way they did it, and then typically they would have one shared common driveway and at one
access point.
Is that how they
actually
not
develop
anymore.
It?
That's not even, I don't even think planning would permit such
created
a
created a lot of opportunities for shootings in our county over
yeah.
the years.
Yeah, yeah.
Because shared driveways create angry neighbors for speeding up and down driveways.
Typically, now in that type of a situation, they would require
like that,
a road to be built.
I don't want access. A road for every single one of those things. And finally, I mean, the thoroughfare, it's a big chunk of ground, you know. If you've got eight of these access points at 25 feet per road frontage coming out, that's a big chunk. And then you got a landing strip, basically, coming right into, yeah. If everybody has their own driveway access point, and that doesn't solve the problem, the guy next to you speeding up and down.
Well, 800 feet is almost three football field length. I mean, in every roadway, that's, it's like, is that just in a 55 mile an hour zone, or is that before the intersection, or is that in all speed lengths? You're right, if there's three things. But, yeah, the driveway thing, too, it creates issues.
I just want, this is fine for a starting point, but I would like to see us have some alternative, maybe an alternative you go out and look at and say, you know, I isn't going to work. You know, this isn't yeah. practical. But, you know, I don't know whether you have that latitude.
He's got the alternative. It just needs to be clearly delineated that if you don't meet this, I mean, all that stuff about we're not going to deny you if you've only got, you know, we're just asking for it to be as far away as possible. Those things is what I'm going to be looking for, that it's specific in there to where somebody doesn't have to come and ask Mr. DeGenevieve, so what do I do in this situation? It's right there in the road spacing standard. It says, you know, if you're accessing this thing, it needs to be at the farthest point of the intersection of your property line or as close to that geographically possible. Stuff like that. I mean, that language should be very clear in there about where it is that his criteria is already set out for what he would be approving in a conversation. I'm going to approve it only if you're accessing it as far away as geographically possible, you know, from the intersection. Let's say that.
And it's usually not the existing lots in their driveways. It's usually the developments that we end up with more of a conflict. It's when somebody takes a lot that's, you know, 300 feet from an intersection and they're trying to put nine new lots in there. I mean, those are the ones where, you know, how many trips then becomes not safe. I mean,
how often is the ODOT standard less restrictive than the federal standard, the AASHTO standard?
The standard books are huge. It's probably only a handful of places, just because they use federal funding, so they have to, like, I-5 has to meet federal standards. There's no...
Yeah, but we're not going to be working on I-5.
Correct.
So I guess for me, I'm looking at that we keep adding AASHTO into our required, you know, mandatory requirements for Josephine County or the national standard. Mm-hmm. Why have ODOT standards if we're going to defer to the national standard?
ODOT typically only deals with the higher speed roads, and AASHTO actually talks more about
the rural
low access, you know, less than 400 ADTs, traffic trips per day. They actually have a book specifically for rural roads that are less than 400 vehicles a day in AASHTO.
Let's see about what resources we want access to review. this and bring it to a workshop.
I got it yesterday afternoon, so I haven't had time to work through.
I'm prepared to really ask the substantive questions that I need to. But I don't want to hold this off because I think this has got a couple of different developments that, you know, and this is by resolution. It's not, that's probably...
How many things do we have that this applies to right now? Have come forward. How many applications do we have?
That are pending right now?
Yeah, this would have an effect on. There a dozen?
No, not a dozen. Maybe one or two right at the moment.
I know. Yeah, I've got at least two. The one that we heard the other day, and then I've got another one. I'm speaking as a private surveyor here.
There could be anywhere between two and six, probably.
Yeah. The challenge is, and I mentioned at the hearing there, is that land is becoming less available, so we're dealing with infill projects now, and so these regulations to meet the strict numbers, is getting harder to do, and so it's going to require more of an interaction, through whatever process.
Creativity,
but also doing it in a safe manner, and that's why I was asking to be able to get the private engineer's input, and basing it on his recommendations. I don't know. Sometimes I get the feeling that the county doesn't want to make those decisions or offer engineering advice, and I don't know if it's because for assuming liability or something like that, and they want the private engineers to do that. Well, then maybe give them that freedom and flexibility to be able to do that and making decisions in some of these harder areas there. If you got one lot, a single lot where you got a single home, is going to be different than if you end up with a property that can't be subdivided or partitioned there. And so when you tell somebody that you can't subdivide or partition as many lots as you have acreage because you don't meet these access standards, that doesn't go over very well. Because
it doesn't go over well for me with a housing shortage.
No.
And that's where, as you have all stated, it just needs to be a clear route, a clear path to be able to make those modifications and review them.
My concern as well, that we're getting the ability in here to say, okay, we have a different engineering report, but this is a shall. And so we're going to ignore this different engineering report that says this is an alternative that would work. We need the flexibility built into these that allows them to say, yes, we will accept this alternative engineering
report. Allows you to say, okay, I can do that. This being our baseline.
And maybe you already have that, Chuck. I don't know. That's already in place. Obviously, you have that, the design standard modification there. So
what typically happens is they... the last engineer that came in for a design modification for access, there's several things to look at. They only looked at one, and they wouldn't look at the other items. And so I had to deem it incomplete because they didn't look at all the items necessary for access spacing. And so, if they had and they addressed all those items, then I would have approved a design modification for whatever that number would have been. But, it's great to say that an engineer says that it's, 3 feet is great. But, if they don't look at all the different things that are required to look at, then they're not making a sound decision on their part or a sound recommendation. It'd be like as a surveyor, if you look at only two sides of the existing lot for pins and you don't look at the other ones and you just assume everything's going to fit, that's not correct, although you could almost make the argument, well, this is the control point, so everything else has to fit. There's more than just, standing up and just saying, I think this is a great thing. They have to have something.
Some basis.
I have experience with this situation in Jackson County, and I did exactly this, and it worked, and okay, we'll look at that. But they don't always.
And I know it's probably frustrating because, but I have seen a couple of instances of people that have talked to me before I was even a county commissioner and said, they're assuming this is what I'm going to do 20 years from now, and this is all I want to do right now. I own the rest of the property. I'm not going to do anything about it. And so they're saying, nope, I can't do this because at some point in the future, there's 40 acres over there that they know I'm going to subdivide it sometime in the near future when I'm not. And we're making assumptions on what people are going to do with their own property and then basing that on it. That's just, I'm getting one side of it, not both sides. But that was a concern to me also, is that we are trying to tell people what they're going to do with their property, even when they say, no, it's mine, it's been our family for 100 years, and we're not going to do anything with that 40 acres over there. We want it to be wildland, because we hunt deer up there or something. And we just ignore all that and say, well, someday you could do that, so right now I want you to do this. Rather than saying, yeah, you put your driveway in here, and if you ever subdivide that, you know you're going to have to make a road up there, and it's going to have to be county standard, and so on and so forth. That's a different plot.
We're going to talk about this on August 15th, Tuesday morning at the general discussion. So
can we maybe, Peter has a couple of issues that he wanted to specifically talk about.
A couple of the items that were included in the new revision here or up for adoption there were had to do with monumentation on projects, and specifically those monuments that go inside of the public road, publicly maintained road right-of-way. So monuments that we as surveyors set on center line to mark, you know, delineate points of curves and tangency and things like that. Another requirement was asking the surveyors to set carsonite posts. They're like a fiberglass post. You see them sometimes on the side of the road. So anytime we set a monument that delineates a right-of-way point along a road, that that post would have to be set. I sent out an email to some of the local local surveyors and just looking for some feedback. I'm still anticipating some more feedback on that, just to kind of see what their view was on doing that.
You're invited to that meeting on the 15th if you want. It's 9 a.m.
Okay.
Right here.
I'd give you adequate time to get feedback.
I think so. Yeah, and I'm just getting back from vacation myself. There,
yeah.
I sent the email out before I left and hadn't had a chance to follow up. But
anything
I just had
that you have, I'd appreciate it in a written form that we could
okay.
review.
And I can
as well.
Summarize, you know, what the feedback or so.
Yeah, it sounds
the emails
like yours are
and,
pretty specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's only two sections there that are one subsection or however it's written up there.
But this general idea of a process of you know, evaluating and having, you know, outside of the specific criteria, when that cannot be met, this is the process that you can go through to address those issues. And that,
right.
for me, is the most important thing to delineate. I don't think that I have the capacity to actually say, well, Chuck, your 440 or whatever you're recommending is not. No, that's probably what it is. What I'm interested in is what happens when that doesn't work and there isn't a cookie-cutter approach to every situation, because I think that's where we get into the most of the challenge. But it should be very clearly described that, you know, an outside engineer can do, that's what I want to have a real thorough look at. So
mm-hmm.
that's what I'm going to be prepared with to try.
And Chuck
to
and I have, as far as my aspects of it, Chuck and I have met a couple times and emailed and talked on the phone very much. So we're trying to work through those
Good.
Two. So, and it's working fine.
Excellent.
So,
okay. Is there anything you want on the 12th from me? 15th, I'm sorry. 15th from me in addition to what you already have.
I'm not so sure that the ASHTO standards, if they're ever referenced, and how do we have access to those if we were needing to, like, look it up as a reference? Where does somebody go? Is that all online?
It was that book
yeah.
that was
oh,
that.
Oh, I've seen it.
I'm well
versed with it.
We have a
but
copy.
How do I get?
We have a copy at Public Works, and people are free to come down and look through it. We don't run a copy because it's copyrighted, but.
You only have one?
We actually have two or three,
okay.
but we try not to, again, they're county property, we try not to loan them out.
No, I'm just wondering if we could have access to one, if we needed to reference something in here to say, well, what does that standard actually say?
Sure.
The ORSs, when we see those all over the place, we can just Google that, look it up,
yeah.
and we read it exactly what it looks like, but I don't think we have the ASHTO ones at our fingertips. And
yeah, and I don't think I actually reference the ASHTO numbers. I think I just reference. And typically it's what's not in the standards is bounces back to ASHTO, because, I mean, if we were going to, I mean, you know how thick ASHTO is, our book would be that thick if we were trying to write every single standard out there.
Well, we'll see how that goes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Lisa, I appreciate your patience. I think in the future, you don't have to come right at the beginning.
I
know you're new and all, but
I was curious.
That's fine. It usually takes a little while. If you are curious, that's fantastic, and appreciate you doing it. But otherwise, if you wanted to Or we can call you because you're local.
Yeah, I thought about that.
We're happy to do that.
Or you can not come like, you know, Arthur, and we can talk about you behind your back and say we're going to talk.
There you go. That, well, that happened last month or last quarter, so I already did that once. Good morning.
Good morning.
So our fourth quarter report, we're just operating standard. We have 600 to 700 clients that come in our office, 88 outreach clients, 700 to 800 phone calls. It's been very steady and static that way. Our recoveries were 388,000 for the quarter, which was substantial. It's good.
Do you have anywhere in there where you say these are? I have so many World War II veterans, so many Korean veterans, so many Vietnam veterans.
I don't.
Do you? You don't? Because
I don't delineate
might be,
between them.
Just think it'd be kind of thinking. Well, okay, how many are going to be not with us in the next 5 years?
So, the expenditure report, the VA expenditure report for 2016 shows that we have 8,800 veterans, which is down almost 1,000 veterans from last year. And you know, I think to myself, well, there was 1,000 veterans missing out of Josephine County or left Josephine, I would know about it. Somehow, I would have that information. And if they died, I would have that information. We are seeing a lot of World War II veterans pass away, and we're starting to see Korean and a lot of Vietnam veterans pass away from their disabilities because they're getting,
also getting
they're dying fairly young. Diabetes and all the other complications thereof from Agent Orange exposure. So we're starting to see that happen more and more. So it makes sense the population is going down. Our recoveries are still the same, though.
But your workload is staying pretty steady, even though
staying steady.
Does that say that Iraq, Afghan?
Absolutely.
Is up.
It is.
Offset Vietnam, World War II, and Korea.
You could make that assumption. I would say that we have not seen the greater impact of Iraq, of the Gulf War veterans yet. That's going to be 10 years down the road when they start suffering from exposure issues that we don't even know about. That's when the impact, I believe, is going to hit. Kind of like the Vietnam veterans. Our outreach to Applegate, where we co-authored with Jackson County, is starting to ramp up, which is great. I was out there yesterday, and we were doing claims out there, so it was fantastic. So word of mouth is starting to get around. People are going to start showing up, and I have a feeling it's really going to ramp up in wintertime when they are not willing to come in either.
Are you seeing the Williams folks come out to the Applegate one now?
I've seen a couple the week before or the month before last. We had a couple from Williams come out.
What's the ramp up from? Where are the folks coming from?
They're coming from anywhere from Jacksonville and Murphy, all the way to Applegate, and you know it saves them a couple miles. And it's a lot of the veterans. The first few that we saw were just live in the Applegate, and they hear about it. We went out and did some PR. Pushed the limits a little bit, went all around Williams, went all around Murphy.
I would rather go to Applegate than come to Grants Pass anytime.
Right.
They don't like crowded areas and traffic.
We're really positive about that outreach kind of ramping up and becoming a really good static outreach. And what's really neat about it is we co-author it. We have Jackson County and a Jackson County VSO and a Josephine County VSO there on site, so anybody can come. The lottery bill 96 passed, which you guys all know, and our funds came in from that. Our first request to receive ODBA funds, and we saw how we have a little bit of a shift, so a little bit of an increase in our grant funds that are coming in. And I'm working with JJ to possibly restructure our staffing and increase our staffing a little bit. So that you guys will probably see that coming down the pike here pretty quickly. We're also going to be looking at more outreach with sistering counties. I think it's really successful, the Jackson-Josephine County component, and I'd like to do Douglas Curry, Coos, and Plyler. So I'm going to be at the table discussing possible outreaches with them and other grant opportunities for us as a Southern Oregon whole.
So we're having our District 4 meeting of commissioners coming up here in the next month. I'm vice chair. Melissa Cribbins of Coos County is the chair of District 4. I'm sending her a text right now to include VA on the agenda. And I think we're in Douglas County for that meeting. I'm not sure where yet. It's going to be a nice location because I'm not doing a courthouse again.
Okay.
And so if it's possible, when I get the date, unless you guys can remember it off the top of your head, I can't even remember which month it is. I don't think it's in August. Love to have you come and make a pitch to the commissioners. I think they could help drive this if that was something you felt was a good use of your time.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Monday the 18th of September.
I'm on vacation the whole month. I'm here for 3 days in September, and that's it.
Sorry. It's intense.
Well, I have to start using my hours.
The board will pitch it.
Okay.
The board will pitch it.
Yes. I mean, I think it's really important that Southern Oregon, there's some grant opportunities
we're
that are going to be coming.
We're looking to regionalize a lot more stuff, so this is a great one.
And there's going to be housing grant opportunities from this Senate bill. There's going to be multiple grant opportunities from Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs for specific veterans' needs. And there's a couple that I'm looking at I would love to collaborate with neighboring counties on for specific reasons. So we haven't even, I'm just trying to coordinate everybody, all the directors at the table at the same time, and that's been just
a nightmare.
A month of changing dates and all of that. You guys
those,
know how that
those Gallup or Google or whatever those poll things are, monkey deals.
Yeah.
They're pretty good.
Yeah,
they help roll well. So they weed out the months apparently that are not good for people and refine it down to good dates.
Right.
I don't know if it has to do with veterans, but I would love to see somebody pitch for a change in the code that describes shelter. Basic shelter instead of it relaxes the building code from all the requirements for a 95% efficient gas furnace and a heat pump, and it restricts you can't have baseboard heaters anymore, and you can't do this, you can't do that, and it's got to be all these energy things, but that puts shelter out of reach for a lot of people. And if I'm wet, I want to be dry. If I'm cold, I want to be warm.
Right.
That's it. I want a place to
right.
go to the bathroom.
Basic need.
You know, so I'm not. Masslows, I want to be sanitary. But I mean, you could build a basic shelter house, and of course, nobody's going to want those in their neighborhood. But
can you fix that, Lisa? Can you do that?
I'll do it tomorrow, Simon.
That would help.
That would be an AOC topic.
Huh?
It'd be an AOC
topic.
It'd be
a great AOC
topic.
There's some.
It's an AOC topic, or it's a prayer to God.
Either way, somebody's got to pray.
Proportionally, that's what you're asking.
Getting the state to,
relax.
There's some models out there that you can really look at and dig from, but in other states.
Works great in Portland. They can do whatever they want. For us, the state can't. So true.
Our work study program, we'll be staffing that up, ramping that up in September, at the end of September. We'll also be doing outreach to college once again. So we're going to start that outreach process as well. The Veterans Music Outreach Program played the ODVA Employment Benefits Fair, and there was 300 to 500 people that showed up. It was pretty big. We're taking a whole other dive into.
You guys going to be opening for Keith Urban soon?
I doubt that. You just wrangle these guys together. It can happen. It's pretty difficult. However, we just got a website, thedd214s.com. Check that out. It's a shell right now, so we're building that. And that's in addition to our Facebook page, which is our Josephine County Veterans Services Facebook page. So we run a lot of VA stuff through there. So that's happening, and that's all growing and building, and I'm hoping to write grants for that program so it can be really a standalone. And we're looking for space. If anybody has any ideas for space for us, that would be fantastic. Any place that I can 400 square feet, 500 square feet that I could just put all this equipment in, and we can meet there for our practices and all of that. That's relatively cost effective. That would be great. I've been
free sounds good.
I've been looking, and I can't find it.
The Grange.
Any commercial.
Grange would seem like a really logical place.
The problem with those is I have to be able to, I mean, I got some equipment, so we have to be able to have
it
completely secured and soundproofed. If it's within range of anybody else, we need to have a soundproofing system. And I'm hoping, but I really
want... It's too loud for every... I mean, but that's a standalone building. They're not going to have anything else in that facility while you're there. Right?
You know what my idea was? My idea was to get a shipping container and to convert a shipping container, because once you buy one and convert it, then it's yours, and you can put it on any piece of county property. I'm thinking
permit, you need a foundation.
Yeah.
It's not as easy as you think.
The parks
sounds
department.
Sounds real good.
The parks. That's what I was thinking. But
that's really not a very acoustic... I don't know.
It's a thought. We were rolling those around. They make them into studios. There's plenty of them that are made. You can buy a sound studio that's a shipping container.
Yeah.
You can buy them. All the acoustics are done. It's all there. Yeah. Things in there. So that was a thought. But I don't know. We're still looking. We are going paperless downstairs.
What's wrong with the Ann Basker? It's not used that much.
It's great, but it's... I can't keep all the equipment set up, so it takes me an hour and a half to get over there to pull all the equipment out, to set it all up, to line everybody out, whereas if I had my own space, it could just stay set up.
Oh, so you want to leave it set up?
Yeah, I want to be able just to leave.
Oh, that's not going to work at a Grange. You're going to have to set it up every time.
Right, yeah.
You might be able to find secure storage in there.
I want to be able to...
Well, it's good to have goals, Lisa. That's a great goal.
Very, very similar to the concerts in the park, having to set up every...
You don't wear
the equipment out from usage. You wear it, put it up the set.
Well,
down.
Every
I'm
band
hoping to
that
find
travels around the country, I mean, goes to Red Lily, and any of the they bring it out of their wagon and they set it up and they tear it down. And they,
exactly.
It's
kind of. And then except to get roadie at 60.
You're going to have to find where I've seen it. Is like John Nolan, Ryan's dad, they built their whole, they had an outdoor barn that they converted to a place, and yeah, stuff set up there all the time,
right.
Year round and whatever, the acoustics are all done, they got the tiles up there.
Who's the guy out there on Water Gap that had the...
That's where you're going to find a private person who's got a huge garage.
Yeah, they just went, hey, I'll give it to you guys.
Yeah,
you guys
can have it.
It's a veterans. Yeah, you take it. That'd be great. Yeah, exactly.
Sounds like you should be able to find that.
I'm working on it. We're going paperless downstairs. And instead of hiring a company to come in and go through tens of thousands of files and upload them and just kind of cram and upload them all, we're going through each one. File by file and pulling out what we don't need to put up into this system and what we do, and so that's a good chunk of our...
Do you have a records retention element, and is IT just doing that, or are you having to pay for it?
No, I actually, my record retention is under the county 7 years.
Okay.
And DD-214s, I have to keep them forever.
Yeah.
I cannot get rid of those, so we have those.
You need those paper copy, or you need those electronically? Because there's certain things that have to be paper copy.
I think they're paper copy. We got one from the Spanish American War down there. We actually preserved it so that it's
laminated. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, we just put it in a Ziploc bag to preserve it, but it was falling apart. Yeah, there's still pretty incredible. Huge history down there.
Cool.
And that's about it. Do you guys have any questions for me?
Any questions?
We're pretty steady. We're an easy keeper. We're
Honestly, Lisa, low
upkeep and big impact department.
A Commissioner DeYoung point. So there's a couple of things. I think long term, if you're looking to secure someplace outside, maybe we couple that with a new office in a different location. You don't have a nexus to anything in this facility, maybe other than the clerk's office.
Right.
There's no reason for you to be in this building.
There are
reasons for other people to be here, and they're not. So long term, I think if you're looking for another place in the community, maybe we evaluate that. How efficient is it to have you here? The other thing is that Commissioner DeYoung brought this point up about how much your activities bring to the economy here locally each quarter. We appropriate about $100,000 to your program from general funds.
Right.
The return on the investment of the economy that you are able to bring here is huge. Leveraging those dollars of $100,000 bringing in whatever it is that you do on an annual basis that otherwise wouldn't be here.
$57 million.
Yeah. So
comes in.
Why aren't we looking at, like, what I'd like you to do is bring us a proposal that says, okay, so we've got these state funds that just came in. We're going to be able to reorganize and do this. If I had another $100,000, I could be providing this amount of service to these amount of veterans, returning this amount of money to our economy. And I need to know that number to do a cost benefit of saying, I can spend $100,000 through economic development to do this that may or may not result in two or three jobs being created. But if I give it to you, I know I'm bringing in $10 million more to the economy, which translates into a huge amount of for the region.
And no infrastructure. You don't require any infrastructure.
I don't have to follow up with, did you actually create those jobs? At what rate, wage, for how long?
Right.
No, I think we need to really be looking at that.
Okay.
So can you do that by your next report?
I can.
Great.
I can do that.
While you're on vacation.
Pretty much. I'll see you in November.
It's kind of part of your reorg. You know, maybe you don't need it. Maybe you're at the end if you say that. But, you know, if you had one more person that you could put in, what would that do?
The more service office, well, I can just show you history. So when I brought
on... I don't think it's going to be hard for you to present that.
Right. It won't. At all.
Thank you so
much.
All right.
You're welcome. Have a good day, guys.
Next on the list is finance.
Yeah.
Is he here? Oh, he is here.
I made it back.
I think he's always multitasking. He's a very important person, so I have to keep that in mind whenever he comes or goes.
I've got ideas that no one's ever thought of yet. So
I'm still waiting on
it. Even you.
Not
been
even
here
me.
For a while.
even I don't know yet.
His biggest compliment for any idea I've ever come up with, why didn't I think of that? And I ask myself the same question every time.
Well, I wished I'd have thought of that, yeah.
Cumulatively, we've come up with good ones. Okay.
So two things I want to make sure we cover. So annual fee changes. That's coming up in September. Typically in September, I send out a memo to all departments and say, if you want to update your fees, now is the time to do it. And we require a request that they provide us with the, if it's an existing fee, you know, how much you're currently getting, how much do you expect additional. The justification has to be there as far as how they calculated the fee. It cannot be above and beyond what it costs to provide the service. So there's some parameters there of what you can, how much you can charge, and if there's a new fee. So that's going to start in September. I sent out the memo to all departments, say we're going to begin the process. The county charter requires us to hold meetings on that and gives us a 30-day implementation. So once it's approved, you have to wait another 30 days before you can implement. So what we try to do is have it ready so that on January 1st, all the new fees are in place. So that's coming up. So if you have any thoughts, ideas, or as your department manager should be touching bases with you.
That's another point that they need to run this through the liaison.
Yes.
It's not good for it's always better for a manager to have a commissioner who's endorsing the idea. I'm not saying that they couldn't if the commissioner liaison doesn't, but it isn't real successful if the liaison says, nah, I just don't endorse this idea. I think it's the wrong thing at the wrong time. It usually doesn't go very far.
Yeah, or if they say, I've never heard of that before. This is the first time you've brought this to my attention.
Yeah.
So that's the annual fee process. That'll start this coming month, September. The other thing is Title III. Title III a year and a half ago, something like that, moved over to our emergency services manager, Jenny, and she was coordinating that very well. It's basically your FireWise community and your community wildfire plan. it's been very restricted as to what you can spend it on, and basically...
We only have like two or three projects that we will appropriate money to.
Correct. The Community Wildfire Plan and the Firewise Communities, which are now called, they've updated the term, but it's still Firewise Communities. Yeah. And you can also reimburse search and rescue on federal property. So if there's an actual event, not preparation for or anticipate, but if there's an actual event, so we give a small amount. The reason I'm bringing that up is because for September of 17, you have to have all your funds obligated. That's the date, and then you have to have all your funds more or less. It's kind of like a soft close, September 17, next month.
Yeah.
And then September of 18 is kind of like the hard close where you have to have your funds committed.
I think Rocky's under the impression that actually you just have to have them 17.
Designated, obligated. Yeah, whatever. That's what it is. It's kind of
because you could do it on a multi-year program to say that you're going to do your Firewise Communities and you're going to appropriate $200,000 over 4 years. They're obligated. They don't have to spend, but they're in the queue to be spent. The challenge is that I really see there's a federal forest management reform bill. Senator Wyden, Senator Merkley, Congressman Walden, they're all dialed in on the idea that all of these counties are sitting on a fairly substantial amount of money with an incredible restriction on how they can use the money. So I expect legislation to change the criteria for how you can utilize existing Title III funds. So I think what I would suggest, we aren't going to receive any additional programmatic requests that are outside of what you can use it for planning or wildfire prevention types of stuff, but you can't buy equipment. You can't do hardly anything with it. So what else is anybody going to do? We're all stocked up with every plan that we could possibly really do. Ideally, I want to use these Title III funds to implement the Community Wildfire Protection Plan. That's what Jackson County wants to do. We want to jointly take our Title III funds, hire somebody to go to the federal agencies, to organize everybody, to move that forward so it isn't some plan that sits on a shelf. Because it wasn't going to be Jenny's job to implement it. It's not Sarah's job to implement it. I mean, to a degree, but not hold the baton. So that's what we're going to look at getting legislatively approved. I think we're at a holding pattern of appropriating those dollars, obligating them, to use the right term, to the Firewise Community Program and anything else we could do for search and rescue reimbursement.
Right,
it used to be $50,000 a year, but they didn't even apply for five. So it's, that was overkill, but...
We've got the money, so all the Title III money we're going to get, we already have. It's sitting in the bank, sitting there. It's around $900,000 right now. It's sitting there, and it's obligated to emergency management for the Firewise Community Program. The Community Wildfire Project has basically ended. We could amend it within the existing project, but at least under current legislation or current restrictions, we can only spend it on a project that's already been approved and underway.
Because there's a process. There's
kind of like pulling out of a redevelopment agency of projects that you already have approved.
Correct.
And that's, they got to, this is the end of it.
So I'm saying we've got a very small window right now that if we wanted to expand the Community Wildfire Program or something of that nature, then we need to get an advertisement out. We need to get that going right now so that it can be obligated by September sometime. By the end of September.
I need to touch base with Sarah and see if there is some navigable way to put in there the further planning implementation as an extension of planning part of the CWPP. If there's some language that we can...
Thread that needle,
going to work.
Yeah, we're formulating a plan. We don't know what's in it.
Well, it's kind of continuity, not putting that plan to bed, because we don't want that to sit on the shelf.
Identifying a given project with it. But
that it would be within that scope.
The project is defining it.
Yeah.
defining what you need these for.
I'll talk to Sarah today and see if otherwise I don't really see the efficacy of moving forward with advertising again. There's really nothing else to do.
Right. She may already have something in her bag of tricks.
Yeah, we'll see.
And so you can appropriate and give additional monies to existing programs.
Yeah, that doesn't take any advertising, no process.
You don't have to do anything. But if you're doing something brand new, and that's what I'm trying to bring forward here, if there's something brand new, then we
can't just not put the CWPP to bed, so to speak. It's really, it's a continuation of what we've existed to do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Then I just need to do a little, just an internal extension, because current CWPP ended June 30.
Okay.
So I just need to do a little internal extension on that.
Thanks for remembering and bringing that back to the board's attention.
So now just the rest of my stuff is just what I'm doing or what projects are going on. So we're going to be interviewing next week for the human resource payroll assistant position that was approved in the current budget. So we're hoping that will alleviate some of the burden on both all the new hires that are going on, and also when we move to a biweekly payroll, that will give us the coverage we need, the depth we need to make sure we don't have somebody sick and we miss a two-week payroll. DMIC is next week, so we've got the remediation, hopefully the closure, maybe not closure, but the finishing up of the remediation process for the underground storage tanks.
When is Seth going to be here?
Tuesday.
Okay.
Tuesday.
Do we have a set time when we're meeting?
With Seth, no, he didn't have a... So I don't know if he's showing up first thing Tuesday morning or mid-morning, but sometime morning-ish, noon-ish is what he was saying.
Okay. Well, maybe we just go to lunch, because that's the only hour I have available Tuesday.
I'm sure he'd love it.
That sounds good.
And then Hugo Hills, we have the recorded agreement with Oregon Housing. We recorded that agreement, and that was the next major milestone. So the next piece of paper I should see will be, here's your payoff for requirement for Hugo Hills. And then it's yours. There's no more of a lien, there's no more of outstanding debt, it's yours. And then we can, Mike Watson's already working on it, but as far as repurposing Hugo Hills and or selling it as the board directs. So all kinds of things coming up, fair, public works, public health, transient room tax, lodging tax, so all kinds of things. But
next week we're having our property sale. You have staff there, because this is different. We're doing a lot.
The financing.
So I need to make sure that we're adequately staffed. Hopefully we've got a big enough location. That happens on Tuesday at 2. Are any of you interested in being in attendance?
If you need us there, otherwise...
Oh, I'd pop in just for curiosity's sake.
Let's just put that on the board's calendar.
Tuesday at 2.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll talk about the schedule later. Do you have schedules? Can we go over? Good. The other thing I had is that I had a meeting with a manager yesterday who was talking about the travel reimbursement policy, and that it isn't clear. I think we were talking about sending out a memo to everybody and providing clarity. I think the board's this board's and previous board's endorsement is to make it as simple for the one person who does all the travel reimbursement for the county, and that it complies with what our auditors are looking for. One of the things that I think is important that everybody know that we're trying to move towards is we don't want receipts for stuff of travel elements. I don't want your meal receipt. If you're in Eugene for a meeting, you get X number based on a federal designation per
right,
diem.
Right.
And I've seen people try to, they submit receipts and maybe they had a beer or whatever. I don't care. I don't want two receipts. I don't want to see anything. You get your $22 or whatever it is for dinner. You get your breakfast. If it isn't provided by the conference, if it's provided by the conference, you don't get reimbursement for it. You should have had breakfast at the conference as you were being paid.
We can't require them to eat at that location. If they can, they don't get reimbursed for it, but they're not required to eat there. So if they have to eat somewhere else, they can get reimbursed.
Okay.
Well, if they have to, and that's the key for me, is
that... They have to provide a reason why.
There has to be a reason. Either I'm a vegan, I'm on a restricted diet, I have to have some special issue, something going on.
Even that, I was at that leadership, that conference up there, they were providing...
Yeah, they
different
do.
Breakfasts
a lot
for
of them
everybody.
Do. And that's so that's why it's flexible. Just give me a story,
yeah,
and it'll work. But
also, when yeah. Anybody's traveling, they come back and I get into the office at 5 o'clock, you don't get dinner for that day. You have to be outside of the 2 hours.
Right.
And people don't know that.
It's clearly in the policy.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. And a particular manager who called the other day, the whole issue was... is that this manager was not familiar with the fact that we're following IRS reimbursement. That's our policy. Mm-hmm. You will be reimbursed according to the IRS guidelines, which includes a $5 per day incidental. If you have overnight travel, you get a $5 per day incidental, which they did not put on their return, and then saying, you know, why would I want to pay someone $5 when they did not request it? Not the point. The point is we process everything according to the IRS guidelines. That way we don't have to negotiate. We don't have to go back 2 months from now and someone say, well, I should have received $10 because I spent two nights at the whatever.
It is what it is.
It is.
And it's very simple. It's clear.
I think so, but
it's efficient this way. And I think we need to be consistent and implement it. And everybody needs to know, as of I wanted it as of July 1, this is what we're doing, and we're not making exceptions. So if we are, it's the liaison and you or somebody needs to be the designee for that. And that's it, because it makes her life, just walked out, that much easier. The poor lady, just feel badly for her. So anything like I can do to help that. There was also something she was saying that of using a county car, needing to provide specific maps delineating exactly where she's gone in the entire duration of the trip, which just seems cumbersome.
That doesn't sound correct. We would not require that.
Okay.
What
is
we say is
requiring
that.
We've always been told to justify your mileage.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you're getting reversed for mileage, so the way they do it is they put in Google Maps. Well, I had a multi-day trip, so there's travel back and forth. And it used to be that you were reimbursed for 50% of the trip. Now you're reimbursed for all of the trip, so if you have to justify the mileage.
I don't think it's
mileage.
Reimbursement that this person was talking about. It was using a county vehicle. And so if it's 200 miles to Salem, and
that,
she was driving from
county,
a hotel.
If it's county, we don't care.
Yeah, you wouldn't be getting a travel reimbursement from us.
I'm
from
not saying
AP.
Travel reimbursement. I'm
right.
saying a delineate. Listen to the words I use. A travel map delineating everywhere they went using a county vehicle on their trip. And I'm like, man, I used a county vehicle. And no.
Who would require that? I don't know.
It's only on private reimbursement that's required. It's not on a county vehicle. Your county vehicle, you just don't use for personal use.
I don't need a map
use.
Of everywhere you went.
No, no. And even on a private reimbursement, all we're doing is general reasonableness. Test. So if you say I went from Grants Pass to Redmond and back, we verify that with Google Maps. And if you're close to that, and I know it could be from the south of Grants Pass to the north of Redmond or within Redmond, you're
the
driving here or there.
From your vacation or from your location of work.
Yeah, your office, your official work site.
Right.
So I mean, you can have those. A little bit of variation there, but all we're testing for is reasonableness.
Yeah, that's, she was saying that somebody was requiring that and that the auditor was
must
looking
be
into
fleet. It must have been a fleet thing.
She was thinking of her office, but I don't feel like there's a great
not if it's a county vehicle.
Yeah.
No, I've never heard that. You know, we've talked about on county vehicles, though, having the locators. The Verizon has a thing for
GPS thing.
that it's not only...
Not out of work.
I mean, but
we have that in all of our parks vehicles.
It should be countywide. Yeah. It really.
They can tell how fast you are going, all that stuff.
You need to find out how much that costs.
It's $10
vehicle.
A vehicle.
Ten
a vehicle a month.
Pretty cheap.
It works for parks because then they don't have. Sometimes there isn't cell service or something, and I don't know. They can tell where they're at.
They
stuff.
Use a different band than cell.
Yeah,
so
it's real nice.
It is. I did the whole presentation. They also have the ability that if you have people doing multiple stops, you can put all the addresses in, and they give you a list of what route is going to save you the most economy. But they can tell you if someone's doing stupid stuff in a county vehicle that's going to have wear and tear.
Last year, somebody called in and said that your parks director or your parks manager or somebody was running around doing stuff or whatever, and was like, no, actually, they were not there at that time. You're looking at, maybe that was an ODOT person or something else, because our parks person was over here, and we know that because there's a history and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, and you get, back in the day, I remember, not when I worked for the county, but I worked for the state, and back in the day, they had my license plate and my location and said I ran a red light and I did this, that, and the other. Well, no, there's proof that that was not the case and it was not me and not my vehicle, but they gave my vehicle's license, well, I mean the state vehicle's license plate. No, it was just, it's wild. So if you have those kind of things, specifically if you're daily, it's a daily usage going around the county, that can be very helpful.
I don't know if we don't want them all, but some of them may
be. We've talked about even putting the locators on some of our equipment that could potentially be stolen, because then you can find it if it's stolen. I mean,
you can see if it's on a construction site all weekend.
Anything else for finance? I had one last thing. I think I would really like a very thorough, comprehensive evaluation of a first quarter of the budget. I want to go through every single budget, because we didn't necessarily do that in preparation for this budget year the way we have in some other past ones. I think even maybe a monthly report on progress from the juvenile detention and shelter startup and the jail. I think it might be a positive thing for this first 6 months to have that kind of a report. Doesn't have to be the sheriff, doesn't have to be Mr.
himself,
Goodwin, but I would like a representative of each of those to come in and make a monthly report. Does that sound reasonable?
Just so we can answer the voter when they say, what are you spending the money on?
Or when are you going to be up and running?
Yeah.
I think we touch base with them every month, and actually this is where we're at right now, and this is where we plan to be next month.
That's a great idea.
Okay. That's all I had, actually. I'm finally done. I think, actually, just chill for a second. I make a list.
Take that phone away from me.
I know. Well, if you do, you have to do the work.
And it's all manual.
You don't want to do that.
No.
Oh, I had approached the city about a TGM grant for the fairgrounds. So we did one of these things with the city for the Demick campus. Transportation Growth Management is a grant program provided by ODOT to facilitate future developments. Just looking at the one for the Demick campus, about $30,000, hired a contractor. It was actually really positive. I think it did a lot of things for putting us all on the same page, and it was a great joint project. We're part of their urban renewal district, the fairgrounds is, and I think that's the first one that I'd like to take a look at and say.
It'd be nice to see what a vision for that could be.
And it's a transportation start, but I think that's pretty important for like what you're looking at doing. That's going to direct, I think, us. It's a starting point for me. Mm-hmm. And so I've reached out to Mr. Kubik on that. He's receptive to the idea. Liaison to both Public Works and the fairgrounds might be a great nexus for just how do we move forward with
that. How are you doing?
Yeah.
How are you doing on that?
Well, I'm not so sure it's their responsibility on that. They did take the lead because they had a staff person familiar with that. So that might be something that the city applies for, but we just need to be a partner in that effort so that if they go it alone, they may not have the same vision that we have.
Well, I think the circumstances have changed for the fairground with the implementation of your tax increment district and all the things the city has done. So it's probably a good time to revisit that. I know there's a fairgrounds master plan, but I'm guessing it's probably dated and doesn't take into consideration convention centers or movement of public
feels
works.
Feels like it was done in
those.
2009 and it's sitting on a shelf up there. But
I brought that up to Peggy, that we need to update that with an eye on, let your mind wander. What size fairgrounds would you see? What would that footprint be in the future? Whether it means moving the Midway off of Ringette, and bringing it in from there instead of off of Redwood Highway.
Yeah.
You know, the possibility that ODOT would pay for that upgrade because they want us off of Redwood Highway.
I think it's bigger than just the fairgrounds. And I think for me, I'm looking through the lens of 72 acres. and it's what is best for there for the mm-hmm. future.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you want horse stalls right next to your convention center. I'm just thinking. I don't know.
Anyway, start with that process. Anything else?
For him?
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other business?
Other business, yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Commissioner Morgan?
I want to give you guys a heads up. So meeting with public health staff today at 2 o'clock or 2:15. So I won't be there for the general discussion today. Some other meetings that will be coming on. I do have a training I have to do on Tuesday. And it's from 8:30 to 10:30. I'll be done at 10:30. I can come back and catch the end of the general discussion, but that's my conflict there. I apologize
maybe
for that.
We'll try to see what we can do about that.
And then I have meetings scheduled for the 16th and 17th with the other two public health meetings, so we'll have all of them taken care of. Tonight is the animal shelter one. Can we get an executive session scheduled to go over the applications for the project manager position? We need to, we have a couple positions that are just kind of hanging out there, and I think we kind of need to have some discussions about that as far as what direction we're going, what are we doing. I don't know. Monday, it may be a possibility.
It may not.
It might not fall under executive.
It may not, but I think we should have it should be on a general discussion that might provide us direction to get it on executive session.
Okay. But I'd like to move that along, let's see. We got some emails from the sheriff with concerns about the ACO stuff. We've gotten some of that resolved, and we're going to have a final big meeting next Friday with the sheriff, HR, legal, finance, public health, and myself. Just to kind of work out some of the specifics so that can happen. Mm-hmm. So I think we're back on track.
That was a fine line of getting towards an issue that should not be going to all board members. I don't mind getting an FYI from you, but when we're included in that, this is probably more for the sheriff, but it really goes back to how it started with the BCC to us.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much cleaner when he responds to you, doesn't come to us, and we don't need to see that stuff.
And we should let him know. For me, I included you guys in my response, so you know I responded.
And you can do that in BCC, and then
it doesn't come back. And
further,
I'll get
that's
that
a
changed.
Real cool way to do it.
Okay.
I don't think we crossed the line with anything because there was just putting meetings together.
And I only saw his further responses on my phone. I didn't realize they went to you guys.
I didn't read it. I didn't.
Okay. Where we're at is Arthur helped a lot, so thank you.
Great.
And so he was getting information internally about finances that were not consistent with what Arthur had. And so that's the biggest thing, is alleviating some of those fears and just making sure he's in the loop.
Yeah.
So I wanted you to know about that. I know there was something else, and I'm just blanking on it at the moment, so I apologize. I do have some questions about schedule coming up in September with some AOC stuff. We're supposed to have an AOC day on Monday, September 11th. That's the monthly legislative stuff, but with that legislative session ending, I don't know what that looks like, being it's my first legislative session. So I wanted to throw out there and get some feedback from you on that one. And then the week after, we do have the AOC district meeting. I assume all three of us mm-hmm. are to attend that mm-hmm. up in Roseburg.
We may be able to call it sometime in September.
We had the same week. We leave that Thursday for County College.
Is that AOC meeting on the 18th of September? Because I don't have that on my calendar.
Correct. AOC District 4. I got it. So there was a recent email about the legislative retreat. Dan and I are not legislative committee members, mm-hmm. so we're not going. But in that email, I saw the district meetings listed.
Yeah.
And so I put it on my calendar. Great. Just so I would know when it is.
Do you have a time on that?
It starts at 10 a.m. in Roseburg, so we're going to want travel time before that. And it goes to 2. Let's see. Is that correct? Yeah, it goes from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Douglas County on Monday the 18th. And the district is kind of the southwest corner of Oregon, so it's for us to meet. But yeah, that Thursday, Dan and I leave for AOC. One of the things I was invited to is on the 23rd, an air science meeting in Portland with Larry and some airport board members. Representative Stark is also going on the trip. It's leaving at 5 a.m., coming back at 10 p.m., but it means I would miss the Wednesday weekly business session on the 23rd. So I haven't responded yet because I don't know what the agenda is. But it's an opportunity to...
Mm-hmm. I think the aviation is really important.
And go there. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. So I believe that's kind of the biggest things going on. And thank you for your indulgence this morning. My grandmother had had surgery, and this was her follow-up, and we thought we'd be done in time for me to get here by 9, but it went a little over. So I think that's all the scariness I have for y'all.
As long as we're on schedules, I don't feel like we're prepared to do the Illinois Valley meeting next week. There isn't a capacity. We don't have an alternative lined up to do live streaming. We probably could get that at the City Hall. But that would require in the evening to have staff there from City Hall, and we haven't coordinated that. For me, I don't want to have we have followers every week that they don't get an opportunity to do it. In this technological day and age, there should be no excuse that we can't have streaming facilities done at any meeting we really go to anywhere, especially the weekly business session. And so
I don't understand why they say we don't have streaming ability.
I don't either, but it's really not up to me. I just need to work it out with John.
Who's out of town for the week.
I need enough time to do that, and right now I feel like we're scrambling.
You
the thing is that
bump it a week?
I do at least, because I want to be able to get in the IV paper in a responsible way. You have to do that by Tuesday at the latest. And so I kind of feel like we need to have it lined out right before we do it and say, well, thanks for telling us. I'm glad you guys were here, but I didn't know until I read about it in the IB News the next week.
I think the soft opening out there should be overdone rather
tight.
Than underdone.
This is also one of the reasons why fiber optics in the Illinois Valley is
really
critical. With the Frontier phones going down over and over and over again, that actually affects the cell phone service out there.
Yeah.
We need an alternative communication, man. And with the fiber optics, we would be able to live stream from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I was told is, we don't have the right cameras. Whatever. This YouTube's, my Surface is... got plenty of activity. Well, it's not good enough quality. It's better than nothing.
Go to Radio Shack whatever it takes.
Well,
it's
and that's just it.
A big deal.
And you
it's
know,
cheap nowadays.
Yeah. City Hall is available, but I've been in touch with the editor at Ivy News just to give him a heads up.
Yep.
I don't want us to drop the ball as far as that we're doing something out there. The next week is fair.
I'm looking at September.
Okay.
Just do it in the right
and give them time to get something set up, but we need to get something set up.
Absolutely.
Wednesday is always going to be a conflict at the county building, so City Hall appears to be kind of the best format with the structure already set up to try to aim for that.
So what's going on at the county building on Wednesday?
The leasees have the room reserved every Wednesday morning and evening. So they have the senior meals in the morning, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then the evening the church has it every Wednesday night, and it's part of their lease.
Let's go to City Hall.
It's another excuse that we
if
don't need
prepared,
a county building.
Yep.
If it's already
if we can't use it for us.
Right. What is it good for? It's not even good for us. So, yeah, let's just do it at the City Hall. If they've got the facilities, I'll get with John to work it out, for the specifics to get it live streaming. It should be seamless to people who want to tune into YouTube.
Can we get a depth of contact for IT when John's gone? I'm tired of hearing, I can't get that for you, I can't fix that for you because John's gone.
We'll work on that, but at the same time, you're going to get that in facilities, you're going to get that in airports, you're going to get that in every program. We no longer have a manager because we don't have 600 employees here, we have 330.
I hear you.
I agree.
But we have experts in that department, there's 6-7 people working there.
Yeah.
And we don't have anybody but John that can make decisions of our overhead projector. I can buy one on my purchase card and get that and tell them to install it, but they have to wait a week for John. When that affects public hearings, that affects other things like that. You know, Larry is going. We have a contingency in place. We have Rob filling in. We have other things going on with staff. So, I mean, we do have plans for when staff leaves. Here's an area that affects our ability to communicate with the public and do our jobs accurately. And I don't think...
It just takes a little bit of planning, too, but I'll work on
that. That's all we got to do is just say, okay, John, if you're out and something happens...
On our part, too, that we're not trying to put this thing together too last minute. But I'll
something like the Cave Junction thing, that's something that can be planned. We knew enough ahead of time. We can be planning. We should have put a service project in with, you know, different things. We just kind of, that's our fault. That one I understand. Something like Ambassador, that all of a sudden, why isn't that working and it was last week? What do we do? You know, that's different.
It's expire. I mean, it's been doing great for 6 years for me. I don't know if they've replaced the bulb, but it's an old machine. And we had handouts. I'm not making an excuse. I think we can work on that. But I'm okay with a little bit of time sometimes. But I think John should have some depth. We all are aspiring for depth in each of these programs. We're experiencing the same thing in HR right now. You know what? I want something. I'm going to have to wait until JJ gets back because there's only three people working in HR. And JJ, Carlton, and Cicely, they don't have the authority to do that, and they shouldn't. And so, I agree. I get frustrated a lot by when there's a senior manager out. It's just we don't have a lot of depth.
Well, and I think part of it, too, is I had communication with him Monday on something else, and then all of a sudden, he's gone for the week. Didn't know he's gone for a week. So what's the course of action that six people can't do anything because somebody's gone and there's not another outlet for them? That concerns me. Are we being as efficient as possible?
So can you call Sarah? Sarah and I have been working on this challenge of an RV being left at Walker Road. The tow companies are not receptive to anybody but the sheriff officer doing it. I really want her to explain the challenge.
Sarah at Parks?
Yeah. I don't know why we continue to have this problem, but
Walker Road
is over there. We maintain the access point to Cathedral Hills on one.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's the
BLM on the other.
BLM.
People are living at the firehouse.
How much time do you need?
10 minutes.
Okay, because I have an 11:30 potentially as well.
Hi, you've reached Sarah Wright, Parks Manager for Josephine County.
Press the green button.
I don't see
There's no green button.
It was green. It's gone now.
In the meantime, Cannabis Advisory Committee, we need to get those a copy of those to the board, and let's rate those. And I think we're going to implement our old practice. We'll have a sheet. We get a rating system. We each individually take those applications. We rate them, and then we check if we want to interview them. I may know some. You may know some, but we may not all know everybody. Mm-hmm. And so... that's going to be what I would suggest for our first round. We come together and then figure out what do we do from there to try to boil it down to. You don't have to pick all nine right now because I think yesterday, for example, just 1 second, Sarah.
Absolutely.
Gerard Fitzgerald came by and he's like, I have an interest in being on this. Well,
apply.
You certainly have some, and he knows land use really, really well. He helped me out on this urban growth boundary. I couldn't have done it without him. I mean, he served on the urban renewal district, Area Planning Commission as the county representative. We have two on that. He might be somebody that I'd really be, but I'd feel badly if we filled it to nine. He's got to wait 2 years if we filled it. I'm comfortable with getting, let's get seven or so, maybe have a one or two openings, and maybe eventually we fill them. Hey, Sarah, so the board is here and ready to talk about your, not just the RV for your guys' stuff, but the challenges that you're experiencing and ways we can probably help.
Yeah, that's great. So what Parks is running into, Simon, I know you're, or Commissioner Hare, you're more than familiar, but to update the other commissioners, Parks is continually having a battle, whether it is abandoned vehicles, either left intentionally or just simply parked in the wrong spot, not moved, and then also RVs. And although I am Parks Director and have the authority to call in a tow, it's then the issue of actually getting companies to follow through and come and get them. I'm running into the major issue of tow companies not wanting to take abandoned vehicles or RVs, but especially vehicles, because it's costing them money and they are beat up that just need to be scrapped. And so
they don't want to take them to their yard. They don't mind towing them, but it's...
Yes,
it's
exactly.
To where
they
they're towing
them. Don't want them in their yard. Because then they have to pay to scrap them. Now, I have made several phone calls over the last few days and done some research. If a authority such as the county and parks, if we take the abandoned vehicle straight to the scrap yard, they will actually take them from us for free. I think that we're getting somewhere with what the system should be. I think that we just need to re-sign contracts and get everybody on the same page, and that includes the tow company, so that we have a clear understanding of them willing to help us instead of it taking 2 or 3 hours out in the field to take care of one vehicle. It sounds like, in talking to the sheriff, that the contracts that they have signed are very old. I know the sheriffs are talking about possibly re-signing those contracts for tow, but I would like to see that it's not just between the sheriff's department and the tow companies, but the entire county, so that Public Works or Forestry or Parks can all order those tows and have compliance with the companies.
Well, and this is something that needs the state be brought in, because those tow lists and the contracts that the sheriff signed at once upon a time is actually maintained by the state police. So the state police maintains the authorized rotation of the on-call tow companies for the county.
Oh.
And that's what the city goes off of and the sheriff goes off of. And the state police is who initiated all that stuff. So there's more to those contracts with the sheriff's office and the tow companies than just he had a contract with them.
And that's great information, because over the past year and a half of trying to deal with this, nobody has explained that to me. And
I only know it because I was a dispatcher. Yeah, it's just because of being a dispatcher that I have that information.
Absolutely, that's great.
Well, in dispatching, everybody needs to know about how do we solve this. I feel like this is...
The CSOs are having a major issue.
It's going to get worse.
It's going to get so worse.
It's going to get huge, because people are just dropping...
People have been...
Trailer houses and motorhomes and everything else out there, done using them as park.
They're setting them on fire, different things. The city has been getting bills of $4,000 to $5,000 bids from different groups, some of the CSOs. I even had one of the CSOs post something on Facebook trying to say, anybody got a suggestion on who will take this or how? It's definitely something all the jurisdictions are starting to deal with, is people are just trying to get rid of their junk without taking responsibility for it.
Yeah.
Well, they've made getting rid of these things so tough. There's miles of paperwork to go turn it in, so you just leave it on the street. And that's there, or wherever. You know.
But I am willing to update contracts, if that will help. I just know that originally the tow lists were established by state police, and any changes had to go through them.
Hmm. Yeah, it'd be worth the conversation, and... understanding that somebody like the parks director has the full authority to make that call as well, so that I'm not having to make 8 phone calls for a tow. I would love a copy of that list and have a direction to go. Where they take them to, if that isn't part of the contract with kind of the abandoned vehicles, if it's simply overwhelming the tow companies, I think that needs to be an element of what is the solution. Do all county departments just budget it in that we're going to have to spend $10,000 a year to get rid of abandoned vehicles? Do we talk to solid waste agency if there's a way to keep these off of the street? I'm not sure what the solution is there, but I would love something.
So I think you've done a really good job of outlining the challenge. I don't know that we're going to have a solution today. In the interim, we've got a trailer, Walker Road, that needs to be towed. And, I mean, I think the interim solution was to having it towed to the impound yard. And I don't know if the sheriff is or is not. I would imagine he's not receptive to that, but it's really not his impound yard. It's ours. And I don't have anywhere else to put it. I'm not going to tow it to the fair. I'm not going to tow it to the airport. I'm not going to tow it to BOM. The impound yard is a secure location. It's not impacting their work and their operation. And I don't have an alternative, so it
I'd like us to sit down and bring in people that do this for a living, like, for instance, Don Romer out at Automotive Recyclers, or whatever he's called it, Cascade Automotive Recyclers. Mr. Romer would be able to tell us what pathway has to be, have, or as a titled, licensed
serial numbered, VIN numbered vehicle, there's ways you can get rid of that. And I think I'd be anxious to hear from him how that can happen. And then,
Commissioner DeYoung, I did have a conversation with Don, with Captain Recyclers yesterday, and what he did confirm is that he has the vehicle appraiser license. And what that means is whether it's an RV or a car, if it gets delivered to his location, he can appraise it at being under the value of $500, and that gives him the proper authority to fill out DMV form, I believe it's 271, and then immediately scrap the car without having to go through the process of title transfers and liens.
Right.
So that was a real great help. Now, Don is in the process of helping me get rid of the one over at Walker Road. Scott's Towing said that he would tow it for me at the price of gas to Cascade Recyclers, and then Cascade Recyclers said I'm just going to have to pay the cost to dismantle that RV, which could be around $900.
Well, you can't get a better tow rate than price of gas, so
yeah.
I endorse that 100%.
I just get concerned, like, for instance, the one on Walker Road, if we get kids moving in there, transients moving into there, and that becomes a real fire hazard then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you could burn all the Cathedral Hills down just because we didn't tow something.
Sarah, do you have a suggestion for the next step? I mean, it sounds like you've got the Walker Road one figured out.
Honestly, I see the tow company's point of view. They're in this for business. If they continually take cars that cost them too much money, they're going to go out of business. I believe that we need to set up a way to either do this cheaper or to cover the cost as a county, whether that be with the Solid Waste Agency, whether that be with grants, or everybody taking a little bit of money out of their budget. Unless we have more enforcement where we're forcing, you know, people driving vehicles that have been unregistered to them, there's no way to track down these people that are abandoning their
vehicles. Not once they drop it.
Peel everything off of it.
Would there be any benefit to having a meeting with a representative of the state police? Because Commissioner Morgan said they're part of this. The sheriff's office, a tow company, yourself, the Solid Waste Agency? I don't know.
I believe so, yeah, because we're all dealing with it, whether it's ODOT or state police. We all have these things being dumped on our properties, and we all have enough information that I think we'd be able to come to a solution that everybody is reasonably happy with. I definitely think that would at least let the tow companies feel like they're being heard.
Certainly not going to get any better in our foreseeable future, and we should have a process of dealing with it.
Absolutely.
So, okay, I'll put together that meeting in the next week or two, and we'll all sit down at the table and hopefully get this get some sort of a solution hashed out to where I think everybody can kind of benefit. Don's Cascade Recyclers is the probable person. Is there a couple of tow companies, or should we just go off the existing list that we have, or how would you suggest we move forward with that?
Cascade does have the capability of towing, although he would have to charge for that in most cases. Scott's is going to be the cheapest bet for my motorhome right now. I have a list going of who can and can't tow motorhomes so that I know who I could and could not call in the future.
Let's talk about that list, and we'll find out who's the appropriate people or person to be at the table. I don't want to use too much more of your time.
Okay.
Is there anything else?
No, I believe that's it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Great.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm going to be utilizing calling managers a lot more for these kinds of things. It's not efficient for her. She's like, should I be there? I said, you know what, Sarah? I think that there's more you can have done.
I would rather do that than have them sit here for 3 hours and wasting their time.
Yeah, I think they'd like that too.
Okay, great. And we'll be employing that more and more. And not for Mr. O'Hare. He is...
Sorry, you're stuck here.
Except for Arthur. He
or since Simon led the way, or a dock in your pay.
That rhymes. Anything else for the order of the board? There is something. I'm experiencing some challenges in my family's health, a member of the family's health, and that's going to probably, I'm going to be on call. I just don't know. I'm going to try to be here as much as possible, but my brother and sister have been called in. They're coming down. My sister's driving up today. My brother's driving down tomorrow, so it's one of those.
If there's anything you need, please let us
appreciate
know.
Appreciate it. It's just an occupational hazard of getting old, so that's just where I'm going to be, but I'm going to try to be here as much as I absolutely can. So
that comes first, though. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think I'll be in charge.
Hey, no problem. I'm an orphan, and I have nobody else that can die off, and so I'm here. I do have one thing. I had two people from the Williams area that came in, and they have concerns about growing on EFU, and they're entirely against the abuse of EFU land. should I, they would like to approach the board with that, or
they
would
can
it be
call,
something?
I think that the liaison to the planning community development.
I think I'll just steer them your direction.
And if I think that there's something that they
sit down and talk to you and
be happy to.
Maybe you can steer them to the state agricultural people to explain what it is.
Right to farm, right to forest act.
That's
happy to do it.
Mrs. Florin, Wendy, we'll get set up a time with.
So, Lily, you're attending the manager's meeting, I guess, on Monday?
Anything that you guys want to make sure that I cover?
I
was going to talk about public health.
Yep.
And kind of hear from them, any things that are going on.
That sounds good. Any interest? If I'm not available on Monday to attend the Community Economic Development Committee meeting, either of you have an interest?
I am.
Commissioner Morgan, you're there, too. So if I'm here, I'll go. If I'm not, feel free. They're going to be meeting pretty regularly, so there'll be another opportunity to go. In the end, if they started out, they're going to be meeting like every week or every other week.
But it is something I am interested in. I mean, it's something that I've been trying to make connections in the community as far as working on a holistic approach, and it is something I'm interested in. Something that was said the other day is we haven't decided who's the liaison to the marijuana task force. We never really established a liaison to this one either. We just kind of, you were liaison to planning, you're going to do it. But we, as a whole, haven't really talked about either of them.
I don't mind switching it out from time to time. I'm going to want to attend the cannabis advisory ones. I don't mind if we have the full board to liaison to this for a while, but from the planning nexus, I'm going to attend as many of those as I absolutely can. So
yeah, I understand from the planning side. I
just because
the economic
there's a liaison doesn't mean
that
that precludes you from attending. All we have to do is notice it. So there isn't a committee, parks to public works, anything.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that you can't.
Seems that you two are pretty well taken care of on Monday. I'm going to use Monday then to go to Williams and see a couple of grows. I promised I'd go see.
Okay.
Tuesday, we've got a number of stuff. You're unavailable till 10:30?
Correct. It's just 8:30 to 10:30, 2 hours.
Wendy, is there an agenda on that Tuesday general discussion?
No, you just put these on
Okay, we've got stuff. So you're going to get those recommendations to Julie anyway, so those should be fine.
Yes.
Wednesday, we're going to move that weekly business session back to a standard. Is that that's the second, so will it be an evening?
Yes.
So that'll be an evening regardless. It'll just be at the Ambassador.
Okay, so we're moving that back to Ambassador.
Yep. It's there.
Anything on that one? Thursday, August 10th.
Of all things, I've been subpoenaed for a criminal court case from my previous job, so that's going to be a conflict on one of the days coming up in the next month.
Okay.
And on the 10th, I have Lipstick. It's every other month on the Thursday afternoon, so that's a conflict on that one.
Understandable.
So that's two Thursdays in a row. I'm not trying to bail on y'all, but it just is fun. Unfortunately, the next Thursday after that, the 911 agency meeting, it's kind of one of those things that people just like Thursday afternoons for meetings for some reason.
A lot of that.
Well, I would suggest looking at the agendas and finding out which one is more effective.
I've missed a lot of them. Not yours, theirs.
Okay.
On that one, but I am trying to come up with, I have yet to get some feedback on recommendations of a solution for the phone outages with Frontier. This is a major issue of them failing to create redundancies in their maintenance and their equipment. And one question that comes to me is, do they have a franchise with the county? Or is it with the cities of Cave Junction and Williams Township and all this kind of stuff? But how is it that they can be the only one providing service without accountability in our county?
You know, Walden's office might be able to provide you guidance. He sat on the telecom committee for a decade.
I will
really
call them.
Really well-versed.
That's Frontier?
Correct.
Yeah.
It's something that I've had numerous complaints from the Valley, and it's not only affected, I mean, it literally, the landlines go out, then the cell phones go out. Nobody can call for 911. Nobody can call for an ambulance if they need. Nobody knows if they're stranded or not. It's actually a huge public safety concern.
Yeah. good incentive to get your ham radio license if there's anybody in this hemisphere that would be able to respond to your call. So we've got SAR ready presenting today this afternoon at 2 p.m. Anything else for the good of the order?
Just remember, I'll be at the public health staff meeting. Yes. So
we are adjourned at 11:34.